Howdy, folks, and welcome to the January 16th edition of Dead Pit Radio. I'm the Creepy Kentucky.
And I am Uncle Bill.
And we're here for another fun-filled, action-packed week of horror talk goodness.
That's right. We got a lot of stuff to talk about because this is going to be a very special episode where we talk about 2001, A Horror Odyssey.
Oh.
It's going to be all the, well, not all of them, but the ones that we've seen, theatrical films from 2001 and DVD releases from 2001. We're going to be going through all of them, giving you our opinions on them, talking about them, what was good, what was bad, what was going on in the world of horror at that time.
That's right.
Should be fun.
Dead Pit Radio and its as its current existence didn't, you know, we didn't produce shows back then, so this is sort of like what a Dead Pit Year in Review 2001 would be like, wouldn't it?
It is. It's exactly what it is. And, you know, a lot of people say we do too much stuff in the 80s, so we're getting out of that. Can't say that anymore because 2001 is as modern as it gets for
us. In the 80s.
Yeah.
So we also are going to be taking your phone calls about that specific year and hear what some of you guys have to think have to say about a lot of the movies that we'll be talking about. So we'll be doing that as well. And we also have DVDs, DVD reviews,
baby bop-bop,
DVD. We're talking about a movie that's been delayed for quite a while, and nobody knew why, but now we do, because we did get to see it. It's a film by Darren Lynn Bozeman of the Saw series. This is Repo, the Genetic Opera, which stars Paris Hilton, Ogre, Bill Moseley, and Paul Sorvino. Yes, Paul Sorvino.
That I think
Paul
that's Sorvino. Just a misunderstood masterpiece. We'll talk about that later, though.
Yeah.
Also, though, from the Troll Masterpiece Collection, I don't even know what the hell that is exactly, but directed by our buddy Pericles Loons.
Woo-hoo!
This is the 20th anniversary edition of Redneck Zombies. Oh, golly.
Redneck Zombie.
They're gonna eat your asshole.
Got a lot of stuff to talk about this week. We have a news portion. It's not that big of a news portion, but we're gonna discuss a few things. Since we're talking about modern horror films, probably the one series that caught on over 10 years ago now and probably revived the horror genre was Scream. And news broke recently about Scream 4 that it's still very much in the early stages of development. Now, there's a few facts that came out about Scream 4. Kevin Williamson himself is going to start writing a draft, although we don't know if that's going to become the shooting script or not. Now, Kevin Williamson, if you guys don't know who that is, was a writer for Dawson's Creek. And he also wrote all of the Scream scripts. He wrote Cursed, which was another project, Cursed from the get-go. And I think he also wrote an adaptation for I Know What You Did Last Summer. So he was very involved in that era of horror film.
So if you're like a cryogenically frozen teenager from 1998, you're going to love his shit.
Indeed. Now, fact two, Wes Craven may or may not direct, but there is a very good possibility he'll return. If the money's right, oh yes, he'll return, folks. Trust me. Craven's all about money, 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 money. Everybody's got a price. Everybody's gonna pay. Because his name is Wes Craven. And he always gets his way.
Is he gonna come like the premiere with Virgil? Be holding money.
Fact number three. They are making financial offers to David Arquette, Courtney Cox, and Neve Campbell to play cameos. And fact four, this will be a younger version of the Scream movies. Oh, God, no. Is it going to be like prom night or something?
Probably.
Oh, God. It's going to have that guy from That Thing You Do in it. He's going to be the killer.
He's going to have a trucker hat on.
That guy was great.
Yeah. What else is going on with it, though?
So that's all we have for Scream 4.
All right. Dark Sky Films, our good buddies at Dark Sky Films, have released a couple of new titles. And I wanted to bring that up because normally, even if they don't have movies that you really know about or want to see, they have a really good transfer and they have put some really good special features on titles.
True.
So they're normally worth checking out. So both these titles will be released on April the 28th. You've got Michael Reeves' The She Beast, which comes in.
What can they call it? The She Bitch.
Which comes in a 16x9 from the extremely rare vault materials and a new commentary created exclusively for this release. In addition, the Centerfold Girls will also hit DVD with a new transfer from 16mm original camera negative and new retrospective featurette with producer Arthur Marks and actors Andrew Prine, Francine York, and Jennifer Ashley, and will be uncut and uncensored apparently for the very first time.
Hell yeah.
So that's two new films to look out for on the 28th of April from Dark Sky Films.
That's the thing with Dark Sky Films and their releases. It's like some of them you haven't heard of. But after, you know, some of the last few that we checked out, Madhouse being one, you want to give them the benefit of the doubt, I guess, and check all these movies out.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I mean, normally when they pick up a movie, like if you haven't heard of it, there's something about it. It's a lot like Code Red. A lot of people give Code Red a lot of shit for, there's some people that say they've never released a good title. There's one person in particular I know that says that. But
who?
I won't get into it because it'll cause a stir. But,
oh, God.
Needless to say, you just have to be in the mindset to like certain types of films. Like, I like almost all of Code Red's films to some degree. I don't know why. I just do.
Right.
But I also like a lot of the Dark Sky films. They just pick certain films that appeal to a cult fan following, I guess.
So, with that, we're going to take a break, and we'll get some more news and all this stuff. But y'all know what time it is, don't you, Uncle Bill?
Oh, God, is it time to go back to the future?
It's time to go back to the future here on DeadPig.com.
DeadPig and Kevin.
Hello, everyone. I'm Adam Beck. I'll tell you right now, I'm sick. I got a runny nose. I got a fever. I got a sore throat. I'm sick as shit. But I'm a dedicated horror journalist, which means I'm back again for this week's installment of Back to the Future. This week back in 1981, IFI Scope released a little-known slasher film by the name of Graduation Day. The film, directed by Herb Fried, revolves around a serial killer who kills off members of a high school track team and features actresses Linnea Quigley and a 23-year-old Vanna White from the popular game show Wheel of Fortune. Graduation Day was given a limited release this week, taking in $460,000. However, this was the beginning of the slasher craze, and the film would later receive a wide release and eventually took in nearly $24 million in the United States.
Return of the Living Dead, Part 2. Just when you thought it was safe to be dead.
In 1988, Laurie Marr released the follow-up to the 1985 zombie hit Return of the Living Dead. Return of the Living Dead, Part 2 debuted in 1,467 theaters and opened number 5 at the weekend box office, taking in $3.6 million. The film would go on to gross $9.2 million in theaters, which wasn't quite as successful as the first film, which took in over $14.2 million 3 years earlier.
Leatherface, Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3. Now, from the producers of A Nightmare on Elm Street, the real terror begins.
In 1990, we learned that there's roadkill all over Texas when New Line Cinema released Leatherface, Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3. The film, directed by Jeff Burr, opened in 1,107 theaters and debuted number 11 at the weekend box office, taking in $2.6 million. The film would go on to make more than $5.7 million in theaters. Other films released this week, back in 1991, Warlock was given a limited release by Trimark, taking in $780,000. In 1996, New Line Cinema gave Lawnmower Man 2 Beyond Cyberspace a wide release for some odd reason. The film, which should have never been greenlit in the first place, opened number 17 at the weekend box office, taking in $1.4 million. In 1997, Paramount released The Relic, which debuted number 1, taking in over $9 million. And in 2007, Buena Vista released the rather misleading horror film by the name of Primeval. The film, which was advertised as a serial killer film, was actually a movie about a killer crocodile, which left a lot of moviegoers pissed off. Primeval debuted number 8 at the weekend box office, taking in $6 million. I'm Adam Beck, and this has been Beck to the Future for the week of January 12th.
Welcome back to Dead Pit Radio. I want to talk about the new Silence of the Lambs Blu-ray. Now, this edition comes out March 3rd, courtesy of MGM Home Entertainment, with suggested retail price of only $34.99. You got to get that, Uncle Bill.
Buddy, I ain't getting nothing on Blu-ray.
Shut up. Special features include Breaking the Silence. Well, the following are featurettes, by the way. Understanding the Madness. Featurette.
Ooh, the madness.
Funky like a monkey. Inside the Labyrinth, making of Silence of the Lambs documentary. The Silence of the Lambs page to screen 2-part documentary. Includes a wealth of talent, preparation, and authenticity. Scoring the Silence featurette, original 1991 making of, deleted scenes, outtake reel, a special phone message from Anthony Hopkins.
Hello, folks.
Hello, I'm Anthony Hopkins over here in Birmingham. Also includes TV spots, theatrical trailer, and a teaser trailer. So this is a must-buy. I think that we'll get to review this, and this might be a Blu-ray that we'll review on the show.
But honestly, that's got me confused. Why the hell would you want an Anthony Hopkins phone message?
Because MGM's on a budget now. They couldn't afford to fly out to Birmingham to meet him.
But is it just like an answering machine message he left somebody? That'd be cool.
Here's how they got that, okay? You know those, what is that website where you can pay
for soundboards or something?
No, you can pay for your favorite celebrity to call you and leave
Yeah, like J.J. Walker and shit.
They did that thing.
You doing? You're dynamite.
He was like, hello, this is Anthony Hopkins.
Is he fucking Australian now?
I don't know.
Hello, it's Anthony Hopkins over here.
It's Anthony Hopkins. Always taking my kangaroo out for a walk.
Well, we can't ever get the British and Australian thing separating them.
Anyway, I want to definitely be adding that to my Blu-ray collection.
Add my ass to your Blu-ray collection. Let's see. Speaking of ass, here's something that you'll love. The new Twilight DVD announced has been made here.
That's Jason Payne's favorite new movie.
On March the 21st, DVD and Blu-ray release, including a 2-disc special edition of the film Twilight. Apparently none of the extra scenes or anything, extra features have been released yet, but you can expect that to come out March 21st.
Yeah. God.
That's just one movie I've never wanted to see at all.
Yeah. I don't know what to say about that. I mean, that was just one of those things that came out and struck a chord with 12-year-olds.
It really did. Yeah. I mean, I think that's the base audience.
It's like the Miley Cyrus fans' favorite horror film or something.
Here's another real quick thing, though, because it really doesn't even belong here, but I figured everybody would have guessed this by now anyway. The Friday the 13th remake, the MPAA has rated it R for strong bloody violence, some graphic sexual content, language, and drug material. So there you go. It's rated R.
It's rated R.
It damn sure better be rated R. I can't imagine a Friday the 13th film rated PG-13.
Here's a piece of trivia for you, though. What does the R stand for in rated R? Do you know?
Restricted.
Yeah, you know what. A lot of people don't know that.
I know that one.
All right. Some great news, though, about the After Dark Horror Fest 3. Actually, the DVDs are arriving on March the 31st from Lionsgate Home Entertainment. That means we'll get every fucking one of them. We'll probably give them away again.
Oh, God, no.
All the After Dark films,
suck.
All will be available. They pretty much do. Aside from the one last year, Nightmare Man, that was a decent one. It'll be released either in a box set. You can pick if you want to buy all of them in a box set or individually. The movies include The Broken, Slaughter, Perkins 14, which is a sequel, I think, to something that was called Perkins 13, right?
Right. The Anthony Perkins.
Yeah. The Butterfly Effect Revelation. That's the Butterfly Effect 3! Shit!
Did they get Ashton Kutcher back for that?
No. From Within, Dying Breed, Autopsy, and Voices! All these fucking voices!
Voices. I thought you said verses or something.
Yeah.
Voices.
Whispering. No time is left for choices. Or something. It was an Aussie song, something like that. Extras include featurettes, webisodes, and commentaries. So, fuck. The After Dark Horror Fest, when it first came out, I would give them credit that it was an interesting concept. It was cool they were going to do it. Problem is, you're not getting hardly any theaters willing to show these movies. Like, I don't think there was one in Kentucky that showed the After Dark Horror Fest.
No, it's gotten to the point now where...
Three, at least. I think the first one, maybe.
It's gotten to the point where that label on films now is having the exact opposite effect than what I think they intend. It makes me not want to watch them. Whereas I think that they think if they put everything under the umbrella of the After Dark Horror Fest, people will be like, oh, I got to see that. No, that just assures to me they're going to be shit.
Yeah, but I mean, at the same time, there's a few horror nerds out there. No offense to any of you. I mean, we're horror nerds as well. They just want to collect everything like that. So they want to collect all the After Dark films. It doesn't matter if they suck or not. It's just like, I want to have them. It's
well,
like having a complete
thing,
set
though.
Of... You know, baseball.
Cards. You can watch all those movies on Sci-Fi like 2 months after they come out on DVD.
Can do that, yeah.
So what the hell? Why even worry about it? Anyway, here's something that's completely off the radar for a lot of people, though, but I wanted to bring it up. Old Eric Spudick, who's an independent actor, he's been in all kinds of shit.
Eric?
Has opened his own movie shop called Spudick's Movie Empire. And it's going to apparently cater to fans of B-movies and cinematic oddities. And he's going to have a signing with filmmakers Fred Olen Ray, Jim Wynorski, and David Dakota this weekend for free. Everybody's signing for free. He asks people that you bring posters, DVDs, whatever you want signed. These guys will sign it. It's this Sunday, the 18th, from noon to 2 p.m. It's going to be 5910 Van Nuys Boulevard, Van Nuys, California. Bring your favorite posters and movies, get autographed, bring your cameras. Apparently you can take video and pictures and all that stuff. If you're wondering about who these guys are, they brought you such classic films as Chopping Mall, Dinosaur Island, Evil Toons, Hollywood Chainsaw, Hookers, Puppet Master 3, Return of Swamp Thing, Sorority Babies and Slime Ball, Bolarama, and Sorority House Massacre 2.
Woo-hoo-hoo.
So you go by there and get your shit signed.
Check all that out. So some screenings we need to discuss. Opening nationally this Friday, My Bloody Valentine 3D.
Yay!
But it's also available in 2D theaters, Uncle Bill.
That's how we're going to see it, because we never get anything worth
seeing. We're
going to
see it in 2D, because this place sucks ass.
Only way we're ever going to get to see anything in 3D is if people from The Strand actually act the shit out for us.
We don't ever go to The Strand anyway.
So.
Also, though, I have one more screening.
No,
discuss.
You don't.
Yes.
That's it.
Tuesday, January 20th at the New Beverly Cinema. You're going to have some blaxploitation horror goodness with starting at 7:30 with Dr. Black and Mr. Hyde. Directed by William Crane, starring Bernie Casey and Rosalind Cash. And also at 10 p.m., Black Fist! Directed by Timothy Galfus and Richard Kay, starring Richard Lawson, Anisette Chase, Philip Michael Thomas, Robert Burr, and Dabney Coleman.
Dabney.
That's right. Drexler himself.
Damn.
Or Drexel. Whatever.
Mr. 9 to 5.
Drexler's class, something like that.
Yeah, I didn't come out.
That's one series. There's a few TV shows that I would probably buy the first season of just because I won't see them again. I haven't seen them in years. One of them would be the Hogan family. Okay, they've never had that, and I don't even know if you remember that.
Yeah, it was the woman. What was her name? Her Sandy.
She was it.
Sandy Hogan.
That was after they changed it to Valerie's family.
Oh, okay.
She sort of replaced. Was it Valerie Harper? Was that her name?
Yeah,
that was the star of the Hogan family. And Jason Bateman was in that show as well, and I think Andre Gower was actually in that show. Was like Jason Bateman's friend or something. But a few more shows though. Drexel's Class would actually be another one I would get. You can't do that on television. Hey Dude. Maybe the original Dennis the Menace, I would get that if it was out. But all this shit they're coming out with now, I don't want it. I don't need Battlestar Galactica Season 7.
I'd say we'll probably end up getting that, but I'll send it off somebody.
Send it to Axlish.
So here's DVD releases, though, for January the 20th, next Tuesday. You've got Amusement from New Line, which I've heard a lot about, but I haven't actually had a chance to check out the artwork or anything. Boogeyman 3 Special Edition from Sony Pictures. I don't know why there needs to be a Boogeyman 3. I don't know why the hell they need to be a Boogeyman 2 either.
Boogeyman 3, I've been waiting.
You've been boogie-boogie with a boogeyman. Let's see. The new King Kong Blu-ray, 2005 from Universal.
I didn't like that movie that much.
I didn't know that movie was way too freaking long for one thing.
Like, all right, it's a remake of the original King Kong. The original King Kong's like 90 minutes. Why do they have to make this just because it's Peter Jackson and he's fresh off those Lord of the Rings movies? He wants to make it 3 hours.
I have no idea. But then again, I didn't like Lord of the Rings either, so I don't like epic movies.
And the thing is, though, about the Lord of the Rings, whether you like it or not, okay, those was based on massive books, books that were like Bible-sized, three different ones. King Kong, the original movie was 90 minutes. You can tell that entire story in 90 minutes. You don't need to double it just because you're Peter Jackson.
True. So you've also got Moonlight, the complete series 4-disc set from Warner Brothers, which I think that series has been canceled.
Good.
It didn't even make like a season of it. But we got that, and I think that you sent that off.
Excellent. He's
gonna be so we also got Repo the Genetic Opera Special Edition and Blu-ray from Lionsgate.
Which we're going to be reviewing that. Yep. I bet the Blu-ray. Well, without reviewing the movie, I bet the Blu-ray, that probably would be pretty cool looking. I mean, it does have a good look to it, the movie itself.
Also, Vacancy 2, the first cut, special edition from Sony Pictures. I can't believe they made a sequel to that. And finally,
I can't believe they made a sequel to it and it was direct to DVD because that was a huge movie when it came out.
Yeah, apparently they couldn't get Luke Wilson back in it. Finally, though, Saw 5 Special Edition and Blu-ray from Lionsgate's coming out the 20th.
I'm guessing we'll be reviewing that next week.
So check those out next Tuesday from all our good DVD friends.
Saw 5, though, already on DVD and Blu-ray. Already. I mean, it just came out
in
theaters.
Yeah, I've seen it. I've got it.
Just came out in theaters not even 3 months ago. And it's already on DVD.
That's I can't believe how many people shitting on that movie, though. As if, like, Saw 4 was great, and then Saw 5 came along and ruined the franchise.
Yeah. Saw 5 makes Saw 4 look like Saw 2.
Yeah, it does.
So, anyway, we're going to take a break. We will get back. We're going to be talking about 2001 horror films. And a little bit later on, we'll be talking to you guys about films released in 2001. There's actually some pretty good ones.
We're going to talk about it on here, buddy. Let's do that.
That's what we do. This is Horror Talk Radio here at
DeadBits.com.
Has the thrill gone out of your life?
I want to be dead.
Then you need a dose of USA's Saturday Nightmares. Movie so scary. They'll drive you back. Plus, tales of mystery and imagination with a dash of devilish humor from the modern master of the macabre, Alfred Hitchcock. It's all waiting for you every week on Saturday Nightmare. Saturday nights at 8, 7 Central on USA.
Welcome back to Dead Pit Radio. And we all know that Dead Pit started in late 2005. So you didn't get to hear our opinions on a lot of other stuff that came out beforehand, right, Uncle Boo?
That's true. Because in all honesty, we didn't really watch a lot of horror films in the early 2000s. I think that probably around 2003 or 4 was the earliest I started getting back into horror films.
Really? I watched a lot of these when they first came out. I didn't go to the theater that much to see them, but I did watch these once they finally hit like HBO and stuff. So I saw them pretty early on. But a lot of these we're going to talk about, in fact, all these we're going to talk about were from the classic year 2001.
Yeah.
And a lot of people remember the year 2001 for what happened on September 11th. But we're going to try to distance ourselves from that. Because overall, I mean, I think it was a pretty interesting year for the horror genre. So we're going to go through a few of the movies that we may have seen and discuss them briefly. We have quite a list here. So first up is a movie I want to talk about. I know, especially on the Dead Pit message board, a lot of people really like this movie. And this one was actually directed and starred Bill Paxton, and it's Frailty, and this is one of those movies where you think you know what's going to happen, and then at the end they just, it's a twist ending, and it's really original, but Bill Paxton in the movies, I remember, plays like a really strict father who sort of receives a message from God that he's been sort of selected to cleanse the demons of the world, right? And he, along with his two kids, two boys, go around and pick off random people, it seems, at first. And then, like I was saying, at the end, there is sort of a resolution to it that makes everything come together, I guess. And I don't know what you thought about this movie initially, but I thought it was really, really good. I haven't seen it in a long while, but I thought it was a really original type of horror movie. Not necessarily a strict horror movie, more like a psychological thriller style horror, but really good nonetheless.
This is one of those movies, though, where there's a lot of people that really fucking get behind this movie and hype it up and stuff. I just didn't think it was, I thought it was okay, but I didn't think it was anything to be like a cult classic or anything like that. I mean, people get behind it because of the ending or whatever, but honestly, I saw that ending coming, and I don't think that a lot of people didn't see it coming, really.
Buddy, Uncle Bill's like a clairvoyant. He knows.
Well, yeah, you just have to be above mildly retarded not to see that coming, don't you?
Look here. I don't know which twist ending you're talking about. Here, the one I'm talking about is, and we're going to spoil this for people out there, everybody in the movie, everybody's assumed to think that Bill Paxton is a loon.
He's nuts.
That he's just crazy and shit. Well, it turns out that he really did receive a message from God, and that's why he's doing it. I know that there was another twist, which involved Matthew McConaughey, who was the other son,
mm-hmm,
in the movie. But I was talking about the twist that you know, Bill Paxton really was hearing voices from God telling him to go out and kill people.
I don't honestly know if that was, like, the case, because I don't remember that much of the movie. I just remember, like, Matthew McConaughey being the...
Well, that wasn't the twist I was talking about.
Well, buddy, you just spoiled the movie for everybody anyway, talking about the goddamn twist.
I told him it was a spoiler.
But point being is, I didn't like this movie as much as a lot of people seem to like it. It's an okay movie, but I'm not like one of these people that they list it as like top movies of the decade or whatever. I just don't see that.
Well, I don't know about that, but I thought as far as a movie that, when it came out, it didn't receive hardly any buzz at all. It was more along the lines of like
Well, it had Bill Paxton in it. That probably.
Well, that hurt it a little bit.
It's like Bill Pullman, too. If you have those guys leading the movie.
I enjoyed Frailty. I thought it was a pretty cool movie. Definitely one of the better movies to check out from in the last 10 years, I think. I don't think there's no denying that, even though Uncle Bill won't do.
So let's talk about one that I know you like a lot, too. And this is on your top 10 list.
Let's do it. Let's talk about
John Carpenter's Ghost of Mars.
Oh, yes.
And.
With Ice Cube.
This was the one of the return films for John Carpenter. And I'm going to be really, really honest with you. I don't even remember what the hell this movie's about. I know it's about Ice Cube and a group of these, like, soldier-esque type of people that land on Mars. But I've really tried my best to block this movie out of my mind. And it's really not even worth, like,
well, it's something where these officers, they're like police officers, and they're transporting Ice Cube, who's like this criminal, right? And they're also transporting this alien. I mean, I'm just remembering this from when I saw it 4 or 5 years ago. And the alien sort of breaks loose, they have to sort of free Ice Cube and work together to try to kill the alien creature.
So it's kind of like Assault on Precinct 13 then, but with aliens.
Yeah. And I'll be honest with you. When I first saw this movie, when I first got the DVD of it, I actually liked it the first time I saw it. But then you go back and I watched it again. And it's one of those movies where you're just baffled at why you liked it initially, you know, the second time you watched it. Because there's just stuff in this movie that just looks horrible. Carpenter used, because it was a lower budget film, even though it was released by a mainstream studio, it wasn't a huge, you know, blockbuster budget or whatever movie. So a lot of the set pieces, you know, some of this is set on Mars, or I guess most all the movies set on Mars, they use 3/4 scale models or whatever. And even on the train sequences and stuff, and it looks really bad. Now, that's not...
I just remember,
that's nothing compared to some other stuff we can talk about.
Remember a lot of the stuff with the actual, like, ghosts or whatever they're supposed to be from Mars being, like, really bad CG, like really early, like,
right.
CG shit. I remember that looking really, really bad.
But I think part of it, too, is that wasn't it more like a body jumping movie too, like the ghosts of Mars could possess you as well, as I remember. You know, some of these movies we haven't seen in quite a while. But Ice Cube was a horrible choice for the role.
That's pretty much, if you think about it though, that's pretty much the movie that was like the last big movie that John Carpenter did.
Yeah,
he pretty much hasn't done anything since. I don't know if that movie just killed all of his confidence, but he hasn't done any mainstream films or anything like that since then. So,
yeah, the Ghost of Mars. I don't know if it killed John Carpenter's career, but it definitely it's been on a 10-year hiatus, at least.
Yeah, I mean, he may come back and do something, but that was.
Well, he did do the Masters of Horror. That's probably the closest thing he's done.
He was just. I think he did Vampires, then he did this one, but he had a pretty steady pace going there for a while, and then he hit this one, and he's like, shit, shit on it.
Yeah. But anyway, next one I want to talk about is a movie that I only seen one time, and that was plenty enough for me. Directed by Ridley Scott, it's Hannibal. Huh. And, you know, a lot of people were complaining when this came out because up until this point, Silence of the Lambs was a standalone movie, okay? They didn't have any plans at all to make any sequel to it, and they went ahead and did it, and the biggest mistake is they did it without Jodie Foster. They brought in, who was the girl, the redhead? Julianne Moore.
Yeah.
They brought her in. And whether or not they brought, that really doesn't matter either if the script is a piece of shit. And the script was horrible. I think this is one of Ridley Scott's worst movies that he's ever done. And
I'm going to let you in a little secret. I watched this movie again probably about a week ago when it was on the AMC or Bravo or one of those movies. I actually like this movie.
Well, you're dumb.
I like it quite a bit, actually.
Isn't Vince Vaughn in this movie?
No, Ray Liotta's in it.
Oh, though. Ray Liotta. I get them confused because they both look retarded.
The thing is, I'm a huge fucking mark for Julianne Moore anyway. I really liked her in Boogie Nights, and I liked her in Assassins, too. I don't know. There's something about redheads, and especially her in particular, that I really enjoy. And, like, I thought the inclusion of the guy, the little creepy guy who's, I don't know if you remember, he's in a wheelchair. He's all scarred up because of Lecter. He just looks, like, inhuman, the way they've got the makeup and stuff. And he's the one that's, he's like searching out to try to find Lecter and so he can have his revenge on him and all this stuff. He's going to feed him to a bunch of pigs at the end of the film. Mm-hmm. But the one scene that everybody always remembers in that movie, which is a scene that I think is pretty fucking awesome, actually, is the scene where Ray Liotta gets caught by Lecter and he makes an incision around the top of his skull and pulls his brain out and then like feeds pieces of it to him while he's sedated and stuff. I like that movie. As a matter of fact, like, this is going to be weird to say this too, but people always ask us all the time, like, what movies did you originally see and hated, but then you come back and you like them now? Hannibal would definitely be one of them, and another one that I watched again recently and didn't hate that much either was Manhunter.
God, fuck you. You're fucking kidding.
I didn't think it was that bad the second time I watched it. I don't know.
But Hannibal, to me, and I'm not even that huge a fan of Silence of the Lambs, I just thought that was an insult to make a sequel to it and for it to be that shitty. I mean, I only saw it once. I thought it was absolutely horrible and boring. I mean, it's one of those movies, too, that's like 2.5 hours long or something. It's really long. And then they went like a year or two after that and made Red Dragon, which I never have seen.
I watched that. I think that was probably my least favorite, though. The Ed Norton one.
Yeah.
Because, I don't know. Ed Norton's like Bill Paxton.
But that's Hannibal. That came out in 2001 as well.
Okay. So, let's see. Oh, God. Here's one. Here's another one that I think we watched this recently as well. The big budgeted sequel from old Stephen Sommers, The Mummy Returns.
Oh, yes. Actually, this was a movie I watched in theaters. Now that I remember back, we were out of town. Watched it in a huge theater in Lexington. This is another one, though, like you were saying before. When I watched it the second time on DVD, we were watching it recently, I didn't hate it as much. I mean, it's still not a good movie. But when I saw it in theaters, and I wasn't even big into horror at the time as much. I was mad because it was so stupid. I mean, a lot of people would think that the second one was stupid. I mean, the first one was stupid. But I thought the first one was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed the first Mummy. I guess the Mummy remake, although it's not really a remake. I mean, it's more like an Indiana Jones movie with a mummy in it. But the second one just didn't have much going for it. I mean, it didn't really have that good of a story. And they included a kid, like Brendan Fraser and Rachel Weisz's character already had a kid that was like 10 years old, only a year after the original Mummy movie came out. And I don't know. I mean, I didn't think they needed that. And the script wasn't too good.
Well, God, for one thing, they made this one much more like, Brendan Fraser and who is the girl?
Rachel Weisz.
They were like almost superhuman crime fighter type of people, which was fucking stupid. They're just supposed to be like regular. I don't even remember what he did. He was like an archaeologist or something.
Right.
But they made him into like Spider-Man and Batman or something in this movie with like the sidekick being the kid. And it just completely was ridiculous. And they gave them all like really... I mean, they did this in The Mummy, too, but it was really over the top. Like, these little pithy one-liners that everybody had in that movie.
Yeah. I just think, you were saying sort of it's too processed, I guess. They had too many... Like, this was around the time Lara Croft Tomb Raider came out as well.
Yeah, it's kind of the same type of movie, really.
And they had all those weird-ass, like, Spy Kids movies coming around that time. Yeah.
They just had to throw that kid in there, though. They knew that would appeal to, like, the, oh, we'll give him a sidekick. It'll be a little kid.
That little kid, I mean, even though he's a little bit of a central point to the story, They could have done that with the brother, with Rachel Weisz's brother or something. The kid wasn't needed in the movie, but, you know, watching it again, it's not as horrible as I remember it being, but it's still not that good. So, that's, let's see, we don't want to go over all the big ones right in a row. I just have a few on here. I know Uncle Bill's got a lot of the direct-to-DVD titles. We'll probably talk about those towards the end, maybe. One that I wanted to talk about, though, that we haven't really discussed on Dead Pit that much, and we really should, because a lot of people would probably expect us to love this movie, directed by Jamie Blanks, and it's like an 80s slasher film, it really is, called Valentine. And this one is exactly, almost exactly like a movie like Prom Night or April Fool's Day or any of those 80s slasher movies, because it all starts, these kids in school are picking on this nerdy kid or something. His nose is always bleeding, right? And that's right. That's the gimmick with the killer in this. And, you know, they pull a prank on him, and the rumor is that he's fucked up in the head and he had to go to mental asylum because of it or something like that. So, years later, we fast forward years later, and of course, someone shows up in a Cupid mask this time around, and picks off the bitches one by one, and of course, all this happens on Valentine's Day, and the whole gimmick, like, 80 slasher, I mean, all the holidays had like a horror movie.
Well, the whole theme of the movie is based on the theme of a lot of 80s movies, which is something. It always happens at the beginning of the movie. Something happens, and there's some need for there to be a revenge character. Right. So that's your basic setup right there. There's, like, in the beginning of The Burning or Friday the 13th, something happens to somebody, and from that point on in the movie, they just go on a killing spree, and except in this one, you're never really sure who the person is, so it's more like Happy Birthday to Me or something like that. And in the way that it ends, I remember how it ends too.
Yeah.
How they find out who the killer is.
Of course, it's obvious. I mean, yeah. The killer is finally discovered because his nose is bleeding. And you know who the killer is right away, because this was like right around the time, I guess the show was Angel, that was really popular.
Yeah.
And he was the main star in the movie. I think he and Denise Richards.
Which, oh, Jesus Christ. Nice.
And Warner Brothers released this. I mean, this wasn't a small studio.
That must have been at the height of Denise Richards' fame. Like, she never went any like higher than that.
A lot of people would think that we would like this, but I've seen it one time. I just thought it was stupid. It doesn't really have any good death scenes in it or anything, and it's got a bunch of really dumb airhead bitches in it that you don't even want to watch, really. The only one that I think is fun to watch, I always like watching her in movies, is Marley Shelton. I think she's in this, who's in Grindhouse. But
yeah, I didn't really enjoy that movie at all.
Yeah, Valentine.
I think it probably has a lot to do with David Boreanaz, because that guy, he can't act. I'm sorry.
There's a few people that really love this movie, though. Believe it or not, I don't know why.
Well, hell, there's people that really love Final Exam. What the hell?
Yeah.
Anyway,
it's a Valentine for you.
Here's one, though, that I'm pretty sure that you said you liked this. I know that I liked it. It kind of came out of nowhere, though, and it was at a point where this type of horror film wasn't really popular at the time, but it really kick-started a whole subgenre of these type of films. Nicole Kidman, starring in 2001's The Others, which was a ghost film, which you didn't see a lot of ghost films around that period of time.
Mm-hmm.
Ghost films are never, for some reason, as prolific as like slasher films, and, you know, unless you're talking about Asian ghost films, and they're much more, but not like just regular ghost stories.
Well, the director of this, Alejandro Amenábar, I'm really going to, I know that last name, I didn't pronounce it, but I think that he was the main reason this movie worked so well.
I don't know. I think he was a big part of it, but I think Nicole Kidman and those kids and the woman that played the maid or whatever was a big part of it too. Well, and
not, I don't know if it would have worked though without the atmosphere that motherfucker created.
He actually had a movie in 1997 called Open Your Eyes, which was a ghost story as well. So it was like the guy had been practicing for this, you know.
And the first time you watch this movie too, I mean, there's a huge twist ending at the end. I don't know if anybody got that twist ending, if you remember correctly. Really good. And the kids in this movie are, there's a few sequences in this movie that are truly terrifying, and they pulled it off. I remember the first time I watched this movie. I mean, and you got to remember too. I mean, this movie was, everybody was talking about this fucking movie when it came out. You know, this is one of the scariest movies ever. And I mean, to this day, I don't know if people realize how big of a movie this was. I mean, this is probably the biggest horror movie of the year that year, I would guess.
Yeah, had
biggest
to be.
Thriller. But there was just a huge buzz around it. When I first watched it, I thought it was a little bit overrated. But if you go back and watch it again, and you can just see, you know, you can see why everyone loved it so much and why it worked so well. It was just so different from that time. There were truly terrifying sequences in the movie. It was just a really cool story overall, too. It was a real throwback to a lot of the early, you know, thriller horror films, the 1960s.
Well, it took the approach that you needed to build up suspense and actually have some characters that people would give a damn about. And plus, it was really well acted, too, like I said. I mean, Nicole Kidman really pulled off her role, and the kids in it were, like, not annoying like most kids are in films. They were actually, like, really good actors too. I'm not sure where they came from. They were British. I remember that, but I don't know where they got them from. Really,
they got them from Birmingham, Brighton.
Probably that's where all British people come from. But there's the whole middle sequence in the film that kind of tips you off to what's going on. If you go back and watch it, you'll figure this out too. And I'm sure that most people who are listening to this have probably already seen it. But there's the whole middle sequence in the film where her husband comes back and stays with him for a while and stuff, but then he has to leave, and you get, you know. Right. Kind of, it's just, it played with your head in a lot of different ways.
Yep.
It's kind of neat.
So, that's The Others. And we really don't have a whole lot of good stuff to talk about in this year, so we're going to have to talk about some of this stuff. There's, the remake trend was going then too, actually. Not as heavily as nowadays.
No, I think it was really, really infantile at that time.
This one is, like, not one I really want to talk about too much because I've only seen it once, and I was dozing throughout the whole movie. But it's the remake of 13 Ghosts, which was actually directed by a guy named Steve Beck, who made another movie the year after called Ghost Ship, which we haven't really talked about that one that much either. That's pretty worthless.
Well, that guy needs to quit making films.
I think he did.
The thing about it is the opening scene in Ghost Ship is fucking awesome. Like, that's one of the best opening scenes to any horror film, like, in the modern era that I can think of. It's just the rest of the movie, you're like, Jesus, why didn't they just stick with the formula that made the first scene good? I mean, they went, just the rest of it just falls apart. But as far as 13 goes, I don't even remember that much about that movie anyway. The thing I remember about it is it's got that shithead Matthew Lillard in it or whatever from Scream. And I just know that, like, there's 13 rooms or something in this house.
Right.
And each room, they'll open it up and there'll be, like, a different monster in it that'll kill the people. And that's actually a really good idea if you pull off the monsters and make that effective.
It was a great idea in, like, the 60s when it came out initially, whenever the... Yeah, I mean, Matthew Lillard and his sister sort of inherit this house. And once they're in there, they're pretty much stuck. And they go through these rooms, like you were saying. And it's a cool concept, but it was just executed so poorly. And it was just so boring to watch. Pretty worthless movie. So that's all we should say about that, I guess. Stick with some of these that long.
Oh, let's see. I'm trying to find some films that were actually in theaters for right now. And then we'll do the direct DVD stuff here at the end of the show. Here's one that actually I know made it to theaters. And this is one that I probably like equally as well as the others that came out that same year. A lot of people shit on this movie, and even more so because of who directed it. But this is Jeepers Creepers. And the reason why people shit on the director is because the guy...
He's a child molester.
Is... Yeah. Was he convicted of that?
Yeah.
I think he was. There was a film he worked on where he did something with one of the male...
He stuck his finger up a little boy's butt.
He did something like that. I don't know exactly what he did, but was not good. But here's the thing. I have to separate myself from that stuff. Because if it's a good film, it's a good film. You have to be objective about this kind of shit. I mean, no matter who directs it or whatever. So this is a film where one of the coolest newer monsters, like of the modern era too, there's a brother and a sister that are going on this cross-country trip, and they wind up in this abandoned church, and they're looking at, through the church, and the boy slips and falls down into this dungeon-like area where this thing has been stripping people down of their parts, basically. And he finds all kinds of bones in this big underground lair. And he tries to get away with him and his sister, but he realizes that really quick that he's being followed by something. Mm-hmm. And ends up runs into a bunch of different people, but he runs into this psychic who basically tells him that this is a monster who... I can't remember how many years it is, 20
some odd years.
Yeah, every so often he has to feed on people, and he takes specific parts out of their body to make his own body.
That's right. Yeah, this movie is sort of a mix of a monster movie and a slasher movie. And it works, to me, I thought it worked really, really well up to a point. And then it was sort of like they didn't know where to go with it, where to go with the killer. And that's why I wouldn't put this movie up there with movies like, you know, we're going to be talking about Joyride in a little bit, that was in 2001, or The Others, is because half the movie is really, really good. You know, it's actually awesome. But then, like, once the killing takes place, it just seems too random for me. And the killer, he doesn't have as much of a personality. Like, I think that they probably pulled the trigger too fast on when the killer actually shows up and starts stalking them and shit. I didn't
really think that at all. I mean,
well, buddy, I'm talking about what I think.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying though. I thought that the look of the killer was probably one of the better ones that I've seen recently, and the fact that the police station scene was one of the best murderous rampage style scenes that I'd seen in a long time like that. The one thing I didn't like about it that kind of was the whole psychic part of it, where the woman just shows up and basically tells everything, and it seemed like a very odd way just to dump the whole plot of the story, like really, really quick, because they didn't know how to explain anything any better. So you just had this old psychic woman, blind psychic woman, show up and just explain all. And there's something else too with cats and shit like that. I don't know. But I thought the ending of the movie was freaking killer too.
And plus, it led to like one of the best sequels.
No, the sequel.
Jeepers Creepers 2.
Just like to forget that ever existed. But that's Jeepers Creepers, though.
So, next one, I don't really want to talk about this movie that much, but we'll mention it's Scary Movie 2.
Yeah. This is the one where Tim Curry is like a psychic investigator or psychologist or something, and he wants them all to go up to this big house. And
yeah, it's really a whole takeoff on The Haunting. The
yeah, that, the remake. Main story is, but within the house, there's like 1,000 different takeoffs, different stuff. This was like...
I think Chris Elliott's in this.
Yeah, when Scary Movie... I actually didn't mind this one that much. I thought it was okay, but it was really starting to get super silly by this point, almost like the movies like Epic Movie and stuff are now. It was kind of getting to that point, and by like Scary Movie 3, it was... beyond that point, really.
And, of course, Scary Movie 4, which... Scary Movie 4 didn't really even reference horror movies. It was all about War of the Worlds or something.
That's true.
So, anyway, Scary Movie 2...
All the Scary Movies are exactly the same, though. What can you really say about them?
The thing is, though, they progressively got shittier and shittier. Like, I thought the first one was pretty good. I can watch the first one. But none of the others, really. I mean, I never did get much out of the sequel.
If it hadn't been for Anna Faris, those movies would, God, I can't even imagine.
Yeah, she's a good-looking woman.
She's nice.
I like her blonde hair better, believe it or not.
I do, too.
So, what else do we have? Uncle Bill.
I'm not even sure if you've seen this movie, but I figure that it at least needs to be referenced, along with all these other movies, too, is Brad Anderson's Session 9.
I've yet to see that. I've never seen it.
Oh, God. You talk about a movie that's atmospheric. I mean, I don't think you can get much more atmospheric than this movie. You got David Caruso as one of the guys, I forget the other guy's name, who are going into this old abandoned insane asylum, and they're like contractors, and they're going in there to fix it up and, you know, knock some stuff out and build some stuff. Yeah. And they go in there, and essentially one by one, they start to drop off and be killed. And all the time this is going on, this one particular guy starts to notice that there's weird stuff going on in the hospital itself and starts to see weird stuff. And then he finally runs across these tapes, and they're all numbered by sessions. They're like psychiatric tapes of one particular patient.
Session one.
Yeah.
Session two.
When it gets to session nine, that's when the film ends, basically. And then you can't even really explain this movie. It's so bizarre. And you really don't know what's been going on even after it's gone off, but that's what makes it great.
I'm awaiting the sequel, Session 10.
I'm surprised they haven't done that, honestly.
Yeah, Brad Anderson really hadn't done much else, has he, since then?
He did The Machinist, which I actually liked a lot, too. It had Christian Bale in it.
Yeah, but other than that, any commercial success, he just hasn't had it, I don't think. So one that a lot of people, I guess over the years, it's gained an audience. John Dahl's Joyride, which there was a sequel that came out last year, which was absolutely pathetic and horrible.
I mean, you don't even really have to reference that sequel.
But we don't need to dwell on that, because the original movie was one of those movies that I saw the trailer for it. I would have never, ever expected it to be halfway worth a shit, but it was. It was and probably still is my favorite film of that year. And, I mean, it's nothing really, as far as the story goes, it's nothing really groundbreaking or anything.
It's basically a rehash of Duel.
Yeah.
I mean, to be honest.
A group of friends are traveling across country and basically fuck with the wrong guy. And he stalks them, kidnaps their girlfriend, and then it's like one final battle at the end there that kicks major ass. But the one thing that worked so well in this movie that was missing, of course, from the sequel was Rusty Nail. Ted Levine, I think, was the guy's name.
Who also was Buffalo Bill in The Silence of the Lambs.
His voice, he was just the voice of Buffalo Bill, or I mean of Rusty Nail. There was some other guy playing Rusty Nail, but he was the voice. And that was I don't know who they used for the sequel, but you realize just how important the voice of that guy was to this movie. He made it really creepy, and the movie just worked. I mean, it's one of those films that you can watch over and over and over again. It's just really, really enjoyable movie.
Yeah, it just proved, though, that what you can do with a movie when you ask people that are watching to use their imagination, because there's not a whole lot that goes on in the movie up to the very end, except for they have these cat and mouse games between him on the radio or the CB and them, you know, driving along in the car, and you kind of fill in the rest of what's going on. And there's the ending of it's great too. The thing that I liked most about this movie, though, is much like Duel, up till the very end of this movie, you don't really ever get to see the killer's face, and I don't even think in the end you get to see it that much. And in Duel, you don't get to see it at all. But that kind of adds to the mystery. Now, in Joyride 2, the guy they got to do that, it just didn't work.
You really sound like Sonny Landham.
Hey,
woman, this is Rustin Nail.
It's like if you had shown Darth Vader being James Earl Jones. It just doesn't, that voice works, but it does. He wouldn't work as an actor. It's just not what you imagine that to be. So that's why I think it worked a lot better than the segment, and why it was probably one of the best movies of 2001.
Yeah, if you've never seen Joyride, pay no attention to the fact that Paul Walker stars in it. Just check it out. It's fucking awesome.
So now I've got a bunch of direct-to-DVD stuff that we've either seen or just needs to be mentioned for one reason or another because it was so shitty or something. You got The Mangler 2. I haven't seen
Mangler's it. Mangler's been waiting.
Yeah, but it came out. It's got people that I've never heard of. You don't need to watch that ever, though, by the way.
We probably won't.
Tremors 3, Back to Perfection. Once again, I think we said enough about Tremors and Tremors 1 and 2. It doesn't really need to be brought up again. I mean, not us, but the filmmakers. Wishmaster 3, Beyond the Gates of Hell. I think I've got that movie, but I've never watched
it. Didn't they actually make a Wishmaster 4 as well?
I think they did, yeah. I've seen Wishmaster 1 and 2, and they're both really good, but yeah. I've never seen 3. Here's another one. You've got this. I know you do, but I've never seen it. Children of the Corn, Revelation.
Yeah, it was actually the final Children of the Corn film for the time being. I've never watched it either. Children of the Corn 6 was so goddamn bad, I didn't want to watch Part 7.
Speaking of another one that's really, really bad, was The Forsaken, which was like a vampire epic that tried to rip off Near Dark, and it just turned out really, really bad because it had some shit-poor acting in it. Pulse, which was the Japanese version of the film that started all that crap. Lord, let's see. Hellraiser 6, Hellseeker. I'm not entirely sure which one that is, and I own all those movies.
Hellraiser 6, Hellseeker. It's the one with Doug Bradley in it.
Yeah, I think that one is the one with Craig Schiffer in it, the guy from Nightbreed, but I couldn't be like 100% sure. If that's the case, that's the one everybody always like. You either love that movie or you hate it because it really doesn't have Pinhead in it that much at all.
Yeah, if you love it, you're probably retarded.
Yeah, there's like a cult following for that movie, though, because it's so different, and it's not anything really to do with the Hellraiser series. Like, there's no real Cenobites in it or anything. It's like a murder mystery. I think that's the one that is, but I couldn't be entirely sure.
It's Hellseeker.
Here's some funny ones, though. Final Stab, which we saw. Yeah. It's like a horrible Scream ripoff from what I remember. I don't think we saw that one. Stacy, which you don't like for some reason. I do.
I don't like it.
It's like a George Romero ripoff from Japan. Necromaniac, Schizophreniac 2, The Horror Mangler.
Yeah. Well, we reviewed both of those Schizophreniac movies. Those are both awesome. Say that.
They are. That guy's awesome too. He emails. I was scared to death to email him back. That guy's crazy.
He played such a good role in that. Like, still has us believing he's really like it.
I don't see how you could fake some of that stuff. But that's the one that I've got on here as far as direct DVD.
So, I mean,
stuff.
That's in a nutshell 2001 in the world of horror. And as bad as that seems, I mean, it's still, I think, a huge improvement over this past year, 2008. It seems like there was more movies that came out that were enjoyable in 2001.
Well, if you just take those three movies, if you take Joyride, The Others, and Jeepers Creepers, for me, if you take those three movies, that was better than any three movies that came out in 2008. Any one of those movies is better than the best movie that came out in 2008.
Hell, I'd be happy to see another Ghost of Mars.
God, I don't know if I'd say that. That's pushing it.
So, anyway, that is the Year in Review 2001 special. So, what we're going to do right now is take a break and get to your phone calls, of course. So we're talking about 2001 with you guys as well. You can talk about some of your favorite or least favorite. But we'll be back shortly here on Debit.com.
Now, living flesh and blood terror. Blood spilling, bone chilling, towering terrors in one twin thrill show. The Crawling Thing. As clutching terror reaches toward you, the scream you hear will be your own. It's too awesome to describe, too terrifying to escape, too powerful to stop. The Crawling Thing. Plus, from another world, the creature of evil. Half man, half monster, but all horror. Feel your throat grow tight with terror. Watch. Listen. Shudder. Die. The creature of evil. Can you stand to see the most gruesome twosome ever made? The Crawling Thing and the Creature of Evil. Produced in Hollywood by Maniacs.
Hello, folks. Welcome back to Deadbeat Radio. I hope you enjoyed the 2001 A Horror Odyssey,
yeah,
the retrospective of films.
And if you didn't, fuck you.
Right in your jaw.
So what we're going to do right now, we got some fan questions, and we're going to open up the phone lines and talk to you guys about the year 2001. I actually think our buddy Adam Beck of Back to the Future posted a topic actually helping out the Dead Pit fans, listing a bunch of films that came out in the year 2001, and even stuff that we didn't mention, Uncle Bill, like August Underground actually came out in 2001, the original.
Oh, that'd have been nice to mention that, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but of course we always leave something out.
I mean, can't do that, though. You just can't come up with all the films that came out in a particular year. There's too many.
Yeah, but first question we got here is from Mike from Buffalo, New York. He says, "What's up, fellers? What can I say? I'm a Dead Pit fanboy." Uh-oh. We got Dead Pit fanboys now. Says, "Love the show, especially the interviews with Mike Felcher. And personally, your accents make the show perfect." Well, that's good. Says, "Very distinctive, and it sets you apart from the rest of the other drones out there." Well, of course, our accents help, but none of the other horror podcasts or radio shows have degrees in horology, and that's the one thing that we sort of pride ourselves with, that we actually went to school and got certified from the Kentucky Board of Horror. So that's another good thing. But the question is, what is the nerdiest or geekiest thing you've done for horror DVD artwork? It says, "I myself have bought a DVD just to get the lenticular cover, then went back to my car, took off the cover, peeled off the price tag, put the price tag on the sealed DVD and returned it." Is that stealing? Yes, it is stealing. He says, "P.S. Check out Midnight Movie. Similar in technical style and budget, but a lot better than Jack Brooks' Monster Slayer."
I can tell you, I mean, you're the one that does all that kind of crazy OCD type shit to your covers and stuff.
All right, the only thing that I do, and I have done, as related to DVD packaging and stuff, is I just have a thing for stickers and stuff that's included on the actual, like, cellophane. And especially if it's something cool, I will either just try to save the entire cellophane wrapping, like make it sort of like a slip, a little mini slip cover for the case, or I will cut out the sticker and put it behind the DVD case. And I've done this for, but as far as like actual covers itself, I just, you know, I don't really care about.
Yeah, the 3D colors and the lenticular covers and stuff like that, I don't ever buy into that stuff because there's way too much of it right now.
Yep. Hello, you're on Dead Pit Radio. Who's this?
This is Jason Payne. What's going on, guys?
Well, it's about time, sir.
What do you mean? I've been trying to call your show for the last 3 months.
I don't believe any of that. I don't believe you've been trying at all.
I don't think you've been trying either.
Okay, you got me. I don't like you, fag, so.
So when
what's going on?
Oh, we're just sitting around here playing with each other's balls.
That's not a surprise at all.
We're enjoying each other's company.
That's good. I always have to make a shout-out to everybody who always calls in and goes, "So what are y'all doing?"
So when are you going to be moving to the land of the rising sun, sir?
Uh-oh. I think we got... Hello?
All right. It was nice talking to you.
Jason.
Hello.
Can you hear us?
Okay, I think we had a problem with Skype.
That's not good.
That doesn't happen much, but there was like a new version of Skype on
it. I bet he thinks we hung up on him.
We didn't hang up on you, no. I think that something happened where he couldn't hear us and we couldn't hear
him
for a while. So we'll see if we can connect again.
Ain't that a bunch of shit?
I know that he was trying to, he told me he's been trying to call in for a while. But who knows? Let's see if this is him. Hello, you're on Dead Pit Radio. Who's this?
Thanks for hanging up on me.
Okay. No, we didn't hang up on you. There was some sort of problem with Skype, I think, or something.
Oh, okay. I was ready to take it personal and go call my therapist or something.
Yeah, we heard you was like, hey, whatever, dude.
Yeah, whatever, faggot.
Thanks for talking to me, fags.
Yeah, I don't want to call your gay show anyways.
So what the hell's going on, though? You haven't called in about 3 months. What's happening?
Like I was saying, man, I'm trying to call you all. You're all so popular now. Just you don't have time for your original fans anymore.
Yeah, the dead pit shuttle's taking off over.
That's right.
I know, man. I feel like I need to throw the anchor down and try to catch on because it's just going full steam ahead.
That's right. Dead Pit Express. We're going.
Exactly.
It's like the Lakes Express. We're going to be going all around the country.
Exactly. Going to be shaking hands and kissing babies.
But, we're talking about, though, as you know, the year 2001. Is there any particular film that grabbed you from that year and, you know, made you say, oh, what the crap, dude?
Well, I had a lot of moments like that. But I have to say the one that really catches my attention the most is Frailty. I just love that film. I think it's awesome. And it's one of the few films from the 2000s or whatever that I think really was a really just a quality film because there was so much crap so far that's been out. Mm-hmm. And I mean, what do you guys think? I'm sure you've both seen it, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we talk about it in detail on the show, but I mean, we have a little bit of differing opinion on it. Just say that.
About the movie itself. I mean, my thinking is I never saw the ending come. You know, I know a lot of people always, when they sit there and go, oh, man, the first 20 minutes of the movie, I know how the ending, I already knew the ending. That's Adam Beck for you. He always says that every time I hear a review of him, he's like, I knew the ending the first 10 minutes into it. I mean, I just don't do that. I don't know if my mind doesn't work like that.
Right.
So, for me, you know, like with High Tension also, same way, I never saw the ending coming. You know, I just, those movies, I just never see it. So I was completely caught off guard when the ending did come. And I really liked the way it ended. And,
yeah, I definitely agree with you about the ending as well. I thought it was, because I'm one of those guys that usually can pick up on what the surprise or twist is going to be, unless it's something something completely stupid like M. Night Shyamalan, something like he would do.
Right, right.
But this one was really interesting and different ending.
Buddy, shit. I don't want to hear any more about old fucking Frailty Bill Paxton shit.
Man, it was great, dude. Come on, man. Whenever you have your like Bowen Trophy come to life and tell you to go do God's work, you can't go wrong with that.
But so, what's all this stuff about you moving to Japan again? I thought we were done with that.
Oh man, yeah. I think it's coming to close here in the great old U.S. of A. I'm gonna do the Republican version of George Romero. He moved to Canada when Bush took office. I'm moving to Japan that Obama's taking office.
Yeah, I will say this: Japan is better than going to Canada.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who is the president of Japan anyway?
There, so that's good.
Who is the president of Japan these days?
The prime minister?
Sure.
Okay, I'm sorry. His name's Aso, I think.
Oh, okay.
Asshole.
I thought it was Hirohito Yakamoto.
What were you talking about, too, though?
They change all the time, so okay. I'm sorry.
Are you... there's going to be a bit of a problem with you understanding some people over there, I believe, because... you know, most of the people are probably like, Miyagi!
I'm just going to go, what the crap, dude? All the time. So, I think it'll be okay. I speak pretty good Japanese, so I'll be alright.
Really?
How do you say what the crap, dude, in Japanese, man?
There's no Japanese translation to something like that. That's an English slang or whatever, so you really can't say that. I mean, crap in Japanese, kind of like crap would be mukatsuku, so I can go mukatsuku, dude. So, but yeah, I mean, you know, it's, and like I said, you know, it's really all depending on right now time, or I'm sorry, a job, and jobs are starting to open up to me right now as we speak, so we'll see. I mean,
well,
I'm sorry.
If it ever comes to, like, you know, you're definitely leaving or something, we definitely need to have Jason Payne a going away party.
That's true.
Oh, really?
Buy him a you know, Oreo Blizzard or something like that.
a 10-sack of jalapeno cheeseburgers or something.
Yeah. We'll have to pick you up the His Name Was Jason signed DVD. That'll be the
right. Oh, there you go. Thanks. Appreciate it. You all can sign the back of it for me. But I promise that I'll give you all first crack at my horror collection, which I won't be bringing with me. So.
Oh, yeah. You're selling off most of it, aren't you?
Yeah, I haven't really made a big push yet because I haven't, you know, we haven't got a date set. But you know, so once we know for sure there's the light at the end of the tunnel, so to speak, yeah. I will make a big push about getting rid of a big chunk of my collection.
Hopefully, I mean, since we're such good friends here at Dead Pit, you could just give it to us. I mean, you don't really need to.
Oh, come on! You know how you'll do that.
You know how I am. You know by now, CK. You know how I roll. You know how tight I am. It's amazing I'm not Jewish, so.
Yeah, his asshole tightened up like a fucking corkscrew when you wanted to get a VHS tape.
Well,
he's just going to give you all this shit.
The only thing, though, that's like the frame posters and stuff would probably be more of the stuff that we would want because we've got all the DVDs you could think of.
Yeah, so. I mean, like I said, I have a big chunk of frame. I'm going to go ahead and tell everybody now so whoever else out there in Dead Pit Land can email me later and make a bid offer on my stuff. But, yeah, all my frame posters and all the ones that aren't framed and lobby cards and autographs and everything will be definitely most of it be for sale. So.
That's right.
Yeah.
Dead Pit Message Board will be like a hawk shop.
It will be. I know. I'm going to be selling everything. I'll be selling. If I could, I'd be like that girl trying to sell my virginity.
I'm gonna have to get in on some of the poster deals, not on your virginity, but at least on the poster deal.
Yeah, I know CK already put a pretty high opinion on my virginity, so.
I think ST3B took that from you a long time ago.
Oh,
I know. He showed up and was like, it's clobbering time. And he took it.
Yeah.
And then he said it was slobbering time, and I just laughed. I was like, screw this, dude. I ain't doing anymore.
I remember one time, this is fucking hilarious, he got so mad about this, it was killer. Somebody said he looked like Charlie Brown.
Steve Charlie Brown thing, so that's cute.
Oh God, man.
Yeah, well, now I can kind of see that. We need to take, like, a little black magic marker and, like, draw a little curl on his head.
We need to get him up.
Ready to rock.
If we all meet up again for the conventions this next year, get him a Charlie Brown t-shirt.
That would be awesome. Yeah. Maybe he could do, like, the Charlie Brown dance.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome. But, I'm all for that. He's probably right now going to kill me after we said that.
Yeah, probably. But, man, we appreciate you calling in and...
Definitely.
You finally got in, I guess.
I know. I might have to call in one more time just so I can get my money's worth over the last 2 months.
That's right. All right, then. All right. Take
all
it
right,
easy.
Well, make sure y'all make it to Horror House for Thomas Jane.
Oh, Jesus. Is he really there?
Yeah, he's coming.
Yeah, you didn't hear?
Yeah.
Yeah, Thomas Jane signed yesterday. It's on the website, so y'all got to make sure you make it up there.
We could go, Uncle Bill.
Fan and all.
Oh, God, Thomas Jane.
Meet Thomas Jane, the Punisher. All right, then. Sayonara.
Sayonara. I'll talk to you guys later.
All right, see you, man.
See you.
Bye.
So what we got over there, Uncle Bill, for the fan questions? We got a ton of them this week.
Okay, hey, guys, I wanted to know your feelings on downloading films through torrent sites. Do you think this is killing the DVD industry because of low sales and the closing of many great DVD labels? There's more to this, I guess.
Okay.
But it's from Frank Osteen. He also writes, I sent you a copy of that Oscar-winning film Murder Weapon a couple months back with that great Eric Freeman. The reason that people have a hard time locating him is because he used so many different names in the films he was in. He used Damon Charles in Murder Weapon, so who knows what his real name is.
Yeah, I had heard that, too, that he used different names, but I didn't know which ones. I'll tell you what I think is hurting the DVD industry more than torrent sites is... And we haven't talked about this much, but around here especially, the flea markets around here, right?
Bootlegs, yeah.
The bootleg DVDs of stuff that's still in theaters. And the sad thing is, around here, people flock to that shit. I mean, it's unbelievable how many people at each of these tables are buying these DVDs for $3 or $4 a piece. And I think that's... a huge dent in what's hurting the DVD market right now. If it is hurting, I'm not even sure. But
yeah, I don't even know if DVD is it in that really that much trouble. I thought it was doing pretty good, really.
I don't know. I mean, in one
hand, I know that there's some companies that are in trouble.
Yeah, that's true. BCI's done.
The thing is, you can't make DVDs for just one small little niche group of people all the time. I mean, you can't make everything be about softcore cannibal films and expect it to sell well.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm just saying, as an overall market, the DVD industry, I don't think it's doing that well. I mean, I don't think it's doing horrible, but it's sort of like there's some people that are waiting on the Blu-ray versions of particular movies to come out and just getting the Blu-ray movies. Then there's other people like us who won't buy a new DVD for $20-some. They just won't do it, you know. So they wait on the bargain discs. I don't think that the new releases, I mean, how many of you fans out there are buying these new releases for $19.99 at Walmart, you know?
Well, the thing that I see the most people doing nowadays is just they'll have, like, the buy it now stuff on their television. So they'll just, instead of going and renting a DVD or buying a DVD, they'll just watch it on their TV. They don't even have to go to the house.
Yeah. So let's take another fan question. We've got a bunch of people calling in.
Hello, you're on Deadpit Radio. Who's this?
This is Jason XXX. How are y'all doing?
Doing good, sir. How are you?
Good.
I'm wonderful, man. I'm sitting here watching Blazing Saddles while I'm waiting for y'all to answer the phone.
God, have you got around to the fart scene yet?
No, it just started, but I saw one of my favorite scenes, man, right at the start when they're working on the railroad.
Yeah.
And that Chinaman drops out from working so hard, and he says, "Doc, that chink a day's pay for napping on the job." You just don't hear that no more in a movie these days.
Who is that guy that plays that role, by the way?
Man, I don't know, but he's like an old vet. I mean, he is in everything.
Yeah.
The guy that's like the rail boss or whatever, he's in everything, man. He pops up all over. Mm-hmm. I can't think of his name.
I want to have to finally watch that movie because I hear...
You've never seen that at all?
No, I've never seen it. I actually have the DVD. It's still sealed. It just looked like, I don't know, it just looked like something I wouldn't like. But maybe
it's awesome. You'll really enjoy it. I think you would really enjoy it.
Yeah,
of course, they have to cut it up on here. I was just watching, saw another scene where they blanked it out because of something he said, you know. So, yeah, you need to watch that.
Yeah, that movie is about as unpolitically correct as you can get. Like, I don't even...
It really is, man. There's a lot of stuff I can't even repeat on the epic, probably. But, yeah, definitely watch that. So how y'all fellas doing?
We're doing great, man. Hope you had a Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and all that.
Yes, I had a wonderful, wonderful one. I actually got a, you know, y'all talked about those Three Stooges DVDs.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
My wife got me all four volumes of them. I think there's four out right now.
Right.
I got all four of those, so I'm still trying to get through them, but. Yeah, that's an awesome set, man. I mean, if you're a Three Stooges fan, that's awesome to have.
It's amazing they could remaster that as well as they did, too.
I know, man. I know. And I've seen them all 100 million times, and they're still funny as hell, though.
They are, really.
Love them.
I think we got the press release for Volume 5, which is going to be coming out, I think, either in March or April. So be on the lookout for that.
We're the ones with Curly Joe coming out, though. That's my favorite.
We don't want to see that.
No. That's long
Curly's
after.
Curly's gone. That's it.
Yeah. But what we're talking about today is horror films in the year 2001 in particular. If you have any favorites or just... shitty films you want to talk about from that year?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, when I saw that topic on the message board the other day, I thought, what in the fuck? What were they? I said, they're really reaching for topics now. And I thought, were there any horror movies that came out in 2001? So I actually did a search and found like a list of horror movies. There was a place called The Numbers, I think, .com, and they do box office totals and different things like that. And they actually had a list of all the horror movies that came out in 2001, and who topped the list, you know, as far as box office receipt.
Yeah.
And I think the first one was Hannibal, and then it went down. And anyway, I was looking to see if any of those I had seen, and one was The Others, and I liked The Others. I wasn't a big fan of Hannibal, but The Others I liked okay, but I don't know if y'all's like me, but I saw that ending coming a mile away, you know, just... I don't want to ruin it for anybody that hadn't seen it, but...
Which one? Yeah, The Others?
The Others with Nicole Kidman?
Yeah. I don't think I saw that ending coming.
I didn't either, actually.
I tell you, there was just something about it. I don't know if I'd seen another movie that was similar to that.
Well, there is another
one. But, I mean, it just seemed like... Anyway, like I said, I said, I know what's going to happen, and that kind of ruined it for me. But anyway, I did see one on there on the list, and this is by far the least favorite of 01. It's one of the least favorite... of all time, and that was Soul Survivors.
Oh, God.
I think that's Wes Craven movie. That fucking
I don't know who directed it, but that's the one with Elijah Dushku.
Yeah, yeah.
Buddy, that movie is fucking incomprehensible. I don't even understand
really
anything goes on in that movie.
That's actually
one.
And
then when it ends, you're hoping for a big payoff, and then when it ends, you're like, is that all the fucking... That was horrible. It was just horrible to sit through.
Yeah, I don't think that Wes Craven... I mean, he might have been a producer on it, but I'm pretty sure he didn't direct it.
Yeah,
I think
it was like a Wes Craven Presents or something like that. From the mind of Wes Craven. I think that's what they put... I remember seeing in the previews when it came on.
Should have been from the ass of Wes Craven.
But it also...
really?
But it also had the kid from American Beauty in it, too. I think his name was Wes Bentley or something like
Bentley.
That.
Yeah.
And
didn't it have one of the Affleck brothers or one of those other...
Yeah, Casey Affleck,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, that great actor.
I actually own this movie. I've seen it a couple of times, and I still couldn't tell you.
You watched it a second time?
Yeah.
It's amazing.
I still couldn't tell you what the hell it was about, really. So.
Yeah, it's just all I know. Like I said, I don't want to ruin that for anybody. I don't know why anybody would want to watch it, but, that movie was just terrible.
Yeah.
No reason to watch it.
That's just one of those movies where I had no idea what was going on throughout the whole movie, so...
And then it has this... completely stupid twist ending. I do remember that.
Just stupid. All the way around, just stupid. Terrible movie. So
but as bad as the year as 2001 was, I mean, I still think that we both agree it was better than last year's.
when prom night's included in any year, that probably brings the whole year down right there.
Yeah. But,
hey, fellas, I want to ask you real quick.
Okay.
I know y'all are big wrestling fans.
Mm-hmm.
And did y'all see the... ad for the Starcade, the Essential Collection the other day?
We did, yeah.
Do y'all buy many wrestling DVDs at all?
I bought a ton of them here recently just because
Have you got that one or are you planning on getting it?
I hadn't planned on it, though, because originally the idea behind that was they were going to release the whole damn Starcade anthology, the way they did the Royal Rumble
like
and stuff like that.
20 discs
set. That's getting into several hundred dollars, and I think I'd prefer to have it this way. But I was going to say, I would highly suggest it. But actually, I'm going to try to send y'all copies of this that I can... I mean, they'll be DVD-Rs.
Yeah.
But I'm going to do my best to copy this. And
Of Starcade?
Starcade, the Essential Collection. I just bought
that'd
it.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah, that'd be great.
And I'll send it to both of y'all. I won't send you just one copy of each. You know, it's a three-disc set.
Yeah.
And I won't just send you one to, you know, so you have to share. I'll send you one. I got plenty of blank DVDs, so it's no big deal.
Well, that's awesome.
But, man, you must own... If there's any wrestling fans out there listening... I when I picked this up in Walmart the other night, I started not to get it. But the one thing that made me buy it was they have the I Quit match with Magnum T.A. and Tully Blanchard in 1985. And if anybody knows anything about wrestling, they'll know that match.
Mm-hmm.
And there were, I think there was a bootleg tape out a few years ago that floated around. And I'd only seen bits and pieces of it, never saw the whole match. And it's fucking awesome, man. And it's worth, to me anyway, and if you're a big-time wrestling fan, I was a huge NWA fan anyway, and that match alone makes it worth $19.
Yeah. We're really, actually, just this past week we watched, I think Uncle Bill picked up a Dusty Rhodes.
The Dusty Rhodes story.
Yeah,
the three-disc Dusty Rhodes set, and WWE just does an amazing job with those DVDs.
They really do. They've done good, and they've really picked some good matches on here. There's the dog collar match with Roddy Piper and Greg Valentine, and then there's, you know, Sting Hogan, and there's some to the Skywalkers match with the Road Warriors and Midnight Express.
Yeah, you gotta have those.
And they're all the matches. I was really shocked at how well the transfer of the Tully Blanchard Magnum T8 match was, because it looked great.
Mm-hmm.
And that match is 20-something years old. But I definitely, man, I'm gonna try to copy this. I've been wanting to send y'all some stuff. And I've got a lot of time off work here lately. I'm off again tonight, and so I've got a lot of time on my hands, and I've been wanting to send y'all something. And there's something else I want to ask you real quick, and I'll let y'all go, but I know y'all are metal music fans, and
mm-hmm.
I know I heard Uncle Bill, you said you like Megadeth.
Oh, yeah, they're one of my favorites.
Is CK, are you any, you like them at all or not?
No,
not really, no.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll send one copy of this, and then there was a Megadeth concert on HDNet. The other night, I've got Dish Network, and they had a Megadeth live from like 07, and it's pretty cool. If you're a Megadeth fan,
good songs.
Have you seen that?
No, I don't think I've seen it. I bought one.
I'll burn that, and I'll rip it and send it to y'all too. So
that'll be great. I bought one recently. That one night, which I think was where was that ad? It was some, like, Brazil or shit.
Yeah, I started to get that, but...
VH1 Classics, right?
No, I bought the DVD of this, actually. But it was freaking awesome, because they did, like, a little miniature acoustic set outside of the place where they were doing the concert and stuff, for just, fans that were walking by, and it was killer.
Well, this one, they had it was called Blood and Water is the title they gave it, and if the date was right on the thing, it said it was November of 07, I think, is when it was recorded, so it's fairly recent, and they were in San Diego, but pretty cool, though, man, if you like it, but I said, I'll try to get these to y'all, and...
That'd be awesome, man. We appreciate it.
Is the website, is the mailing address at the bottom of the website?
Yeah.
Is that where I'd send it?
Yeah, that's where we get all the Dead Pit mail.
Put deadpit.com on it?
Yeah, if you want to.
Okay, all right.
That'll work.
All right, cool. All right, well, I'll do that, man.
All right, we appreciate it. And,
hey, it's great talking to y'all again,
good talking
man.
To you.
Yeah, good talking to you.
All right, man, take care.
Take care. Bye.
Bye.
That's just an awesome aspect, though. Like, fans of the show want to send us stuff. We always appreciate that. We actually got in some old woman sent her granny panties in the other day. They had shit stains on them.
Why can't we get Miko to send her panties?
Yeah, Miko, you got the address at the bottom of Dead Pit. Send us some, stained panties of yours. It'd be nice.
I think Miko's been kidnapped by some kind of Paraguay death squad or something.
That could be the case as well. But another fan question here from our buddy Cough Cool. He wants to know, have you guys noticed that most new horror movies have about the same sound effects? It almost sounds like nails on a chalkboard when they have a scene that has fast cuts. Yeah, I have noticed that. I mean, I think a lot of that has to do with the MTV-style quick edits and sound. Like everything Tyler Bates scores is like that, you know.
We'll be talking more about shit that sounds exactly the same, though, when we do the Repo review here shortly. One thing I noticed, they overuse the hell out of those. That little camera sound effect from Texas Chainsaw Massacre. My God. That's in every film that comes out now, I think.
Yeah, that's like After Dark Horror Fest official sound effect.
It is.
Another fan calling in, y'all.
Hello, you're on Dead Pit Radio. Who's this?
Oh, hey, this is Justin calling from Washington.
Hey.
Hello, sir.
What's going on, man?
Nothing much. Just sitting here watching Terminator 2, calling you guys.
Cool. Terminator 2 is a good one.
So the topic's... What?
2001. Any films in 2001?
Yeah. I think my favorite film from that year might be From Hell, that Johnny Depp movie.
Jesus, we didn't even mention that, did we?
No, we didn't mention that one. I have seen that one. Yeah, I haven't seen it in quite some time, but I remember it being pretty good.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty good. I thought it was good atmosphere, visual style, and come on, Jack and the Ripper. You gotta love that, you know?
Is that the one with Heather Graham's in that one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a really good film, though.
There was a few movies that came out around that same time. A Sleepy Hollow. I always get that confused
with
Sleepy
too.
Hollow.
Yeah.
Bit, you know. But,
I think in Sleepy Hollow, though, he was trying to act like a really effeminate man, almost like a woman. And in From Hell, he's just basically like isn't he an investigator or something? So he's kind of...
And he's also an opium addict, I think.
Yeah.
I haven't seen a lot of myself, but...
I do like the way that they did the ending of that movie, especially where it all kind of tied in with the one particular guy. I don't want to give the ending away, but
I'll tell you another one he did around that time too. I think this was a little bit before that. I always liked this movie. I think Roman Polanski actually directed it, The Ninth Gate. Have you ever seen that?
Oh yeah, I've seen. It's been a while since I saw that. I don't remember if I liked it though.
I thought it was pretty weird, but
it was weird. Yeah. I've never really been into that. A lot of supernatural stuff I don't really like, but
That movie seems to have a little bit of a cult following for some reason. I'm not for sure exactly why. I think it's one of those movies that has a lot to do with like stigmata and witchcraft or Satanism or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, I like From Hell. Ever since I was a kid, I've kind of been into Jack Ripper because I saw that movie. I think it's from 79, Time After Time, with Malcolm McDowell.
I've heard about that. I've never seen it, though.
Yeah, H.G. Wells. I think Jack the Ripper steals his time machine or something, but somehow H.G. Wells follows him to the 70s. And it was a little weird movie, but the beginning where he kills a girl is always stayed with ever since I was a kid.
I think the one I always hear about, for some reason, probably because people are into VHS tapes a lot on the board and stuff, is that the Ripper with Tom Savini, which I don't think is based on Jack the Ripper, but I just think
That's a really, really generic, like, I think it's shot on video movie with Tom Savini back. I think United Home Video. I've got like a TV spot for that on one of my VHS tapes. That just looks like one of the cheapest movies ever made, man.
Yeah, it's
like
not supposed to be that great, I don't think. Are you in general like a fan of serial killers or?
Yeah, I like slashers and that type of stuff normally, but. And sometimes like monster movies, like I recently saw Cloverfield finally, and I kind of like that one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, people shit on that movie all the time. I don't have any idea why. That's a great monster film, really.
Yeah.
Are you looking forward to My Bloody Valentine this weekend? You're going to be checking that one out?
Yeah, if I can. I only want to see if it's in 3D, though. So I'll have to keep a lookout, see if I can see that around here.
Yeah, we can't get anything in 3D around here. Like I said, they're going to have to act it out of the theaters for it to be in 3D for us.
I'm pretty sure we're fuckety-fuck out of luck when it comes to seeing that in 3D. So.
Yeah, I heard not a lot of places are having it. So.
Yeah. But, man, we appreciate you calling in. I think it's the first time. Are you a first-time caller?
Yeah. My board name is Black Raven 87, but I don't post very much, but... I've been listening since the, I think, Michael Simpson interview, but I've been chicken shit up until then. But
damn, you've been listening for a while, too.
Yeah.
Been a while. Yeah.
But, yeah, man, it's good talking to you.
One more thing, if I can. Have you ever seen the movie Dolls, the Stuart Gordon film?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, I saw it last year for the first time. I really liked it, especially the bit with the teddy bear.
There's just not enough good killer doll movies anymore. Yeah. Charles Band had that market cornered for years, but
The odd thing about that is too, that came out right before Child's Play. So that was like one of the first killer doll movies of its kind, really. And then after Child's Play, there was like tons and tons of them. But
I'd never heard of Dolls, and then I just came upon it. I just I'll check it out. I wasn't really sure if I'd like it since. It wasn't very long, like 70-some minutes, but I thought it turned out pretty good.
So. Yeah, I enjoyed that movie as well. I like, to be honest with you, I like pretty much all Stuart Gordon's movies.
I still need to see, what's that other one? Not Reanimator, but...
From Beyond? From Beyond?
Yeah, I need to see that one.
Mm-hmm. That's a pretty good one, too.
But, okay, I'll just let you guys go. I really love the show and your videos on YouTube and everything.
Cool, man. Well, we appreciate that. And
We really appreciate
call
it.
Call back anytime, man. It's good talking to you.
Oh, I'll try.
All right, take care.
See you, sir.
Okay, bye.
I was thinking, too, is he from Washington State? Because I didn't know we had anybody that listened up in that area.
Buddy, we got people listening all over the world.
Yeah.
Read a question over.
We're starting to get egos, aren't we?
Uh-huh.
We're horologists here. You people are stupid.
Let's see. I guess it's my turn, isn't it? In your opinion, what subgenre has the greatest amount of horror films? Vampire, zombie, slasher, demonic possession, haunted house, mad science, etc. And he says, P.S., when is Sonny Landon versus Ass Part 2 coming out? This is from Bully Blinder.
You'd have to ask Sonny Landon.
Hello, kids.
It's whenever he wants to obliterate my ass.
Well, I can tell you this. It's got to be at least... Just between zombies and slasher films.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing else that comes close.
Back in the day, there were quite a bit of vampire movies, too.
That's true, but I think they probably made more fucking slasher films in the early part of the 80s than they made anything in, any other decade.
I would probably have to say slasher films easily, because it's kind of odd that you can, 20 years after, it's been over 20 years for most of the 80s slasher movies, you still discover new ones. Like, it's insane. I was watching something not too long ago, which you need to watch this, too. This 80s slasher movie called The Last Slumber Party. Oh, my God, that's so fucking cheap and shitty, but it was great.
I just think that people think that zombie movies are the easiest ones to do, but actually slasher movies are the easiest ones. You don't even have to have makeup or anything. You can just...
No.
Somebody with a knife to run around and doesn't even have to look good or anything.
Yeah. We'll await one more... I don't have any more fan questions, do you?
No.
Hello, you're on Dead Pit Radio. Who's this?
This is John from Georgia.
What's going on, John?
Hello.
It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been a while.
What's the subject tonight, gentlemen?
Well, we were talking earlier about horror films, like a horror flashback for the year 2001, and talking about all the big movies that came out, and want to know your all's opinion on the year 2001.
Isn't that roughly when they started doing all that Japanese crap? Yep.
Yeah, it's about the time all that broke loose.
I believe it. Yeah, Wolf and all that.
I just never really got into that crap. To me, you know, honestly, the early 90s is when they quit making good horror movies.
Every once in
a while there's a nice surprise, like Grindhouse, but generally I'm pretty pessimistic.
Well, what about, I'll give you a couple of films that came out in 2001. We were talking about The Others and Frailty. Lord, what were some others?
Ghosts of Mars. There you go.
Yeah, there's Ghosts of Mars.
What about
Jeepers Creepers?
I don't like any of those.
What about Joyride? Did you see that one?
Yeah, it was all right, I guess.
So you're totally you just were out of horror at that time.
It wasn't that I was out of horror. I mean, I love horror, but I don't know. I think that most of the stuff after the early 90s is a bunch of tripe.
Yeah.
What about Wishmaster 3?
I saw the first one. I thought it was okay, but
yeah, I can see how Wishmaster 3 might not make the list.
Well, man, we appreciate you calling in, and always good talking to you. And definitely, hopefully, next time we'll have a topic that you'll be able to talk more about or whatever.
All right. Well, you fellas take care.
All right, man. See you.
Bye.
That guy was completely against 2001. 2001 was a shit.
He turned heel against 2001.
He didn't like Valentine, 13 Ghosts, Scary Movie 2. What's wrong with him? I don't want to end on that note. Let's take one more call. How about that?
No.
Not that there is anything wrong with that. I mean, I expect everybody to love 2001, but I mean, come on. Seriously. Hello, you're on Dead Pit Radio. Who's this?
Hey, this is Schlongs. How's it going, guys?
Oh, pretty good. Oh, how you doing?
Oh, I'm doing just fine. 2001 movies?
That is correct.
That's a really bizarre topic. What made you choose that year?
Well, here's the thing.
It's just random, really.
Yeah, it really is random, but the main thing we wanted to stay away from was doing anything in the 80s whatsoever, or even the 70s, really, because we often get accused of staying in those decades too much, even though I personally believe that's the best time for horror films.
Well, about a year ago, too, we did another sort of flashback.
For 83,
so, I mean, I'm sure other people were expecting us to do, like, 85 or 86 or something like that, and we'll probably do that eventually, but we just really wanted to mix it up a little bit because a lot of these movies we really have never talked about on the show, so we thought it would be a little different to do that.
Well, yeah, I thought it was a great idea, and the two that I thought of right away were, and stop me if everybody's already been talking about them, but Ichi the Killer, Adam Beck put that on there, and or someone put that on there and mentioned, I forgot that was 2001, but I think that's probably the movie that's almost single-handedly responsible for me getting back into actually searching out movies instead of just, you know, so something's at the theater, I'll go check it out. But that was the movie when I saw it, I was like, holy shit, movies are really, something's happening again, and there's something new going on. And then we saw after that with Kill Bill that I think Quentin got a lot of ideas for that movie from it. Are you guys...
Yeah, I think wasn't Ichi the Killer. That was like the starting point for all that what would you call it, like arterial spray horror stuff.
Well, I think that they did that in Japanese cinema a lot, martial arts or whatever. I think they did that a long time, but that was just the kind of movie I think that really amped up the sadistic violence, and it was also just so bizarrely made. With the way the music is in that movie, it's just, and there'll be scenes where like the camera will just stop, and I felt like it's my DVD messed up or something, but it's just how he edited the film together, and I don't know, like, everybody got down on Japanese stuff after then because it seemed like everything was all The Grudge and, you know, all that ghost crap, which I like a couple of those, but, yeah, that got old real fast. But
yeah, there seems to be, like, I think we've talked about this before. There seems to be different, like, two really distinct cinemas that come out of Asia. There's the shit that comes out that I really like that seems to be graphically violent, and I know that you don't like these, but I do, is stuff like Stacy and Junk and stuff like that. And then there's stuff just that's just ghost movies. And those seem to be the only two things that ever get made that come out.
The majority of anything that we've seen over the last two or three years doing this show, it's always it's a Japanese movie. It's a ghost movie, but it's some sort of different situation. Like there's a ghost in a radio station or something, or there's a ghost in the toilet. You know, dead shit or
fax machine or
yeah.
I'm surprised they didn't do it. I really am.
It's a different. It's just a. I don't know, a different spin on the same old story, you know, when it comes to these Asian ghost movies. And I get a little sick of that.
Well, I think the thing that set Ichi the Killer apart so much was that it didn't have anything to do with anything supernatural, really. And it also had the crime element because it was all about the warring Yakuza families.
Right.
And just like taking this totally bizarre body modification freak and positioning him at the head of a crime family was such a bizarre twist that with Kakihara, the guy that was kind of, you know, the iconic image with his throat or his mouth cut on both sides and he kept it together with safety pins. But usually in like a Goodfellas or something, you'll never see some dyed hair weirdo who's like cutting his tongue off. So that was, that was really new and a novel approach, I thought. And yeah, that was the movie that really got me to say, wow, I should really get back into looking into movies and see what kind of new stuff's coming out.
I don't think anybody's mentioned that yet, honestly. You're the first person to mention that, even though, I mean, most people know about it and everything. You said there was two, though. What was the other one?
The other one, and I hope I don't get shit for this, but I really like Jeepers Creepers. I know all about the, you know, Victor Salva. I know all about that stuff. But when I went and saw that movie in the theater by myself, and that scene, for some reason, the theater I saw it in had really loud speakers, and that first scene when the truck that the creeper was in was coming up on the two kids, and it just kept revving up, and it was like really incredibly intense filmmaking, and I really liked the idea because, you know, the 90s had been so dry, and, you know, I grew up on Freddy and stuff like that, and I thought, here's a shot at having a completely new, like a Freddy-type character, a really cool...
We talked about this before, I mean... Mm-hmm. It was a really iconic looking character and it really worked. And a lot of people give that guy shit because of his past and everything. But if you just, we were talking about it during when we do the 2001 review thing. You just have to objectively look at the movie. I mean, I don't pay attention to any of that other shit. I think it's a really good movie regardless.
And
it's like I saw that movie and I thought, oh, this movie's just fantastic, you know? And then you find out that stuff about him and you go back and it's like, he's smelling your clothes, and he's liking it. It's like, oh, man, I didn't see that before.
It's like Rob Halford from Judas Priest. You're like, why did I not understand that Point of Entry was not just an album title?
Something that I find a little odd, though, and even, like, the sequel is horrible. I mean, I like the original movie, but the sequel is absolutely horrible. But both made quite a bit of money. And I just can't understand why it's taken this long. And there's still, I don't even know what the... status is on the third movie. I know it was rumored for a while, but
We heard that it was going to be he was not going to make it. It was going to be theatrical. It was going to be DVD. Like those movies, they opened them up on the same weekend, I believe, and each time they made a ton of money. So I don't know what the holdup is exactly. I don't know. I don't necessarily hate the second one. I think it's kind of fun and funny, but that's another one where like I went into seeing that one knowing his past that time. And it was like, Jesus Christ, in the back of the bus, upside down, sniffing at the kids. It was like, this is a new level of yuck, you know? But I
can't believe they even let the guy make films, to be honest. Like, that anybody, knowing what they know about
him,
especially
a big studio, I mean.
Well, and other than that, he's made, like, Powder, which is about young boys having problems fitting in. And he made this movie, I forgot the name of it, but it's about a gymnast who's like mentored by this older man played by Nick Nolte at his grizzled best. I mean, he's always making movies about young wise boys. So, I mean, yeah, does nobody get this? Is why do they keep giving him these scripts or letting him make these movies? But I will say, despite his, you know, proclivities, he is a talented filmmaker. He does know how to orchestrate a scene and film it so it looks great. I mean, he's a gifted filmmaker, and that's why Coppola kind of took him under his wing, but it's just like his career is completely stalled out, and probably rightfully so, but that's neither here nor there.
Uncle Bill said. Yeah. I'm sort of with you. I mean, I like the overall as a movie. Jeepers Creepers was an excellent movie for its time, and definitely something fresh to come out, because at the time, I mean, the big thing was Scream ripoff. It still was at the time, and sort of changed things a little bit.
Yeah, and they didn't have any stars. Justin Long wasn't a star at the time, and it wasn't marketed that way. And then when the sequel came along, it was like they set up the whole beginning with the in the cornfield, and you know that was the image that the movie that they hinged selling the movie on. It was that, not you know, five heads on a video box staring at you. It was like this is all about. You know, I'd like to see his mythology expanded more, but not ever be fully explained, because I think that's what made the first two films so interesting. Like, you could take that anywhere, really.
Mm-hmm. But
what were your thoughts on Hellraiser 6, Hellseeker, though? That was another came out in 2001.
I don't know. I those Hellraiser movies, man, it's like, I'm a huge 1 and 2, mostly part 2 fan. I think part 3 is kind of just cheesy and fun in a throwaway fashion. I like 4 a lot, but then after that, I think they're all just... I think all the scripts were just written for another story, and they said, hey, shoehorn Pinhead in there. You got a name, you know. I don't think any of them were meant to be Hellraiser once they got away with his core group of Cenobites, so...
The weird thing is I like all those movies that have Pinhead and the Cenobites in them, and they had that one that had Craig Schiffer in it. I don't remember which one that was now. It might have been Hellseeker.
That was Hellworld.
Was it Hellworld?
One of them had Craig Sheffer, and one of them had Dean Winter from Oz, and they're totally interchangeable to me. I don't know which is which.
Anyway, the one with him, with Craig Sheffer, it didn't have really Pinhead in it whatsoever. It was more like a murder mystery type of, where he was playing a cop and all this stuff. And I fucking hate that movie, but for some reason it has a cult following among people that really think it's like cinema noir or something.
Mm. There's very few movies that don't have some measure of a cult following nowadays, it seems. So everything will
even
eventually.
Final Exam has a cult following.
Yes, so, exactly.
We appreciate you calling. You're going to be the last caller of the night, so it's always good talking to you.
I'm glad I got in, and that's awesome. Appreciate being able to talk with you guys.
All right, man. You take care.
All right. Have a good
one.
See you. Right, bye.
Bye. So that's it for the call-in portion. It's been a active one, actually surprised me. I mean, I know this was a little bit of a weird topic, but we just wanted to give the fans a chance to chime in on the year that was.
It worked out, though. I mean, it gets stale talking about, you know, the 80s all the time. It's nice to talk about something else for a while.
We're modern. We're hip. We're going to listen to Nickelback.
I'm hip. I'm with it.
Someday, Sam Hyatt, going to stick in your butt right now. So anyway, we will be back, though. We have some announcements and DVD reviews. And we're probably not going to be talking about what's going on next week because we still don't know.
No.
So we will be back shortly here on
DeadPit.com.
Have you listened to all of DeadPit's past episodes?
Yeah!
All 114?
Sure have!
Then you need to head over to Dead Pit's Dead Mart over at deadpit.com. With exclusive commentaries for 5 never-before-heard films.
I can't believe it's time content I've been heard over there.
Commentaries with the Creepy Kentuckian and Uncle Bill on Cabin Fever.
Halloween 6!
Maximum Overdrive.
Friday the 13th, part 5! And you begin!
And Night of the Living Dead. All commentaries only $2.99 apiece.
You buy them right now, I'll kill your whole damn family.
Go to deadpit.com's Dead Mart now.
Welcome back to Dead Pit Radio. Big thanks to everybody that called in. I know that there was quite a bit of people that didn't get through.
Yeah, there's only like
there was so many people calling though. In all seriousness, at the beginning there, when you know we lost contact with Jay Payne, that Skype froze up literally.
Yeah, we crashed Skype. It is hard. Website.
It's a little difficult to get through sometimes, but if you're persistent, it pays off because you get to talk to the innovators of Horror Talk Radio, and that is us.
So let's talk about, you got some announcements to make, though, before we get into this.
I do have a few announcements. Okay, anybody that wants to get in on the Death Race giveaway, that thing actually ends on Sunday. So not a whole lot of people, I'll just tell everybody, not a whole lot of people wanted to win this. So if you enter, you might have a really good chance of winning this thing because not too many people actually entered. I don't know why. I mean, nobody likes Jason Statham.
No, nobody really does.
But Melantha Blackthorne's in this. She has a small role in
it. I might watch it just for that, really. Yeah. I'm a big Melantha Blackthorne mark.
So that ends, and very soon we're going to announce the details behind the My Bloody Valentine. The original unrated DVD. This is the uncut version with all the gooey, gory extras that we talked about last week.
Yeah, so don't forget, though, you can celebrate the release of the new My Bloody Valentine 3D is coming out today by winning a copy of the original on deadpit.com.
And also, our On the Road for My Bloody Valentine 3D should be available sometime this weekend.
Yeah, we're going to go see that.
That's going to be killer. I've got a feeling.
It's not going to be in 3D, though.
Maybe it is. You know maybe that. We'll be surprised.
I can't even imagine that. Them passing out 3D glasses, that old shithole.
You know, though, if it is in 3D, we'll be wearing our glasses in the second part of the review, so you'll know.
That's true. So, is there any other announcements to be made?
Not too many announcements. We got other videos and stuff up. You can always check those out at youtube.com/deadpit.
I'll tell you this much right now. A lot of people that were privy to some of the blog TV chats that we do blogtv.com chats, every Friday, by the way, that's midnight. Right. A lot of people that were privy to those in the past, you might have heard me talk about a giveaway that we're going to be having shortly. That's going to blow your fucking socks off. So just stay tuned for details about that, because I guarantee you people are going to be interested in that when it happens.
I guess we should talk about the blog TV chat this week. We are going to have a chat, but Uncle Bill's got prior commitments. So he'll be unavailable, and who knows who the co-host will be along with myself.
I gotta wax my ass that night.
Yeah, and then bleach it.
Yeah.
Cause people don't know this. We can let the cat out of the bag. Uncle Bill has been selected to star in Sonny Landon versus Ass 2. And he is going to be one of the asses that Sonny Landon obliterates.
That's mean. Obliterate that ass, Sonny.
Yeah. Y'all know, he don't want to admit it or not, but he really does get his asshole bleached. He told me.
Yeah, me and Courtney Cox, we're big asshole bleach fans.
So, anyway, that's it for the announcements. So we might as well get into some of the reviews. We have two discs to talk about this week. What do you want to talk about first, Uncle Bill? I'll let you choose.
Let's just go ahead and talk about Repo, the Genetic Opera.
Yes, Repo, the Genetic Opera from the producers of Saul. When we talked to Bill Moseley about this, he pretty much warned us that this is strictly music, okay? The thing about an opera is, throughout the entire running time, it is, every piece of dialogue is put into a song, okay? So, right then and there, I could tell that this movie wasn't for me, and it wasn't going to be something that I would like. But I want to talk about, at the same time, I didn't really hate this movie. I understood what he tried to do with it, you know. And you want to talk about the story itself? I mean, that's going
to
be
I appreciate the guy for trying to do something different, though. At least he was trying to do something. Darren Lynn Bousman is the guy that directed this, probably mostly associated with the Saw franchise. But, yeah, in the year 2056... there's been like an epidemic of organ failures across the world. And there's a company called GeneCo which comes in, and they offer organ transplants if you can pay for them. And so they're like a big company, kind of like, you know, any company now, the bigger companies. Only problem is, if you can't afford to pay, they send out repo men who will repo your organs right directly out of your body. So, yeah. You know, that's not.
And each of the organs actually has a stamp on it, property of GeneCo.
Yeah, and the story for this is so convoluted, it's going to be hard to explain. A lot of this is done in flashbacks too, since there's no dialogue. There is like a storyline kind of flashback thing where they do like storyboarding type of stuff. Yeah. But what you got is, Anthony Stewart Head and his daughter, who's the main character in the film, really. He at one time thought
that guy's last name is Head.
Yeah, it is really. He at one time thought that he had poisoned her mother and ended up killing her, and he can only save one of them, so he saves, and she was, the mother was pregnant with her at the time, so he saves the baby. But it was actually all just a big plan by Paul Sorvino, who's the head of GeneCo, to, kind of get back at him because he also loved the woman as well, the woman that he was, Anthony Stewart Head was married to. Like I said, it gets complicated. So, after he has this big diabolical plan or whatever, he gets him to come over and work for GeneCo as the repo man, but nobody knows he's the repo man. Like, his daughter doesn't know that or anything else. Mm-hmm. And his daughter is afflicted with the same blood disease that the mother died from. So, she's trying to go out on her own, and GeneCo's trying to recruit her in as, like, the new head of this. I don't even know. How the fuck do you explain this movie? Jesus fucking Christ.
There's a lot of stuff going on in it. Basically, Paul Sorvino is sort of like the evil guy, and the head guy, Anthony Stewart Head, is, I don't know. It's a weird movie.
Anthony Stewart Head is a doctor in it, but he's also the repo man, like, on the side. And Paul Sorvino is he's the president of GeneCo, and he also has two sons. One of them is Bill Moseley, and the other one's some guy, I don't know who they are. And they're kind of like nitwits, and he has a daughter played by Paris Hilton. So this is where the Paris Hilton connection comes in it. And she, of course, everybody in it gets to sing. And by the way, Bill Moseley can't sing at all. Like, Bill Moseley's like probably one of the worst singers, but I guess that's neither here nor there.
You don't need to, I don't know if it's necessary to go any deeper into, because the plot is sort of, I mean, it's one of those that's like, a little difficult to figure out anyway. I mean, I didn't watch the whole movie just because I knew. I mean, you get the gist of the movie watching the first hour of it. You know what it is, so you don't really need to watch the rest of it. But I liked the look of the movie. That was a big thing that I liked about it. I'm not a big fan of opera music or Broadway music, and that's the main style of music that was in this. I mean, there's actually some musicals that I sort of like. I mean, I like the Tenacious D and the Pick of Destiny and the South Park musical. But in those, they actually had decent songs, you know. And not all the songs were horrible in this. This wasn't like Poltergeist or anything. But it wasn't my style of music. So that was a big thing that I didn't get into in this. I mean, it was one of those movies where you can just sort of listen to it in the background. You don't even need to watch it because it's all, everything that happens is sung out to you, you know.
Well, the thing that makes it really hard for me to watch, aside from the fact that there's no dialogue in it, and let me just say that if you ever watch anybody sing continuously for 90 minutes, that gets annoying. I don't give a damn what they're singing. If they just sing continuously, it could be the greatest stuff in the world, but nobody listens. Nobody, have you ever sit down and listen to music for 90 minutes unless you were hiring a kite? I mean, it just doesn't happen. So anyway.
I've done it before.
Anyway.
I wasn't high though.
The thing is, I don't remember what the point I was trying to make is. It's not just the fact that they're singing throughout the whole thing. It's that the music sounds exactly the same.
A lot of time when they're singing, they're not even any music playing. They're just singing.
Well, they got this band that's like industrial, it's like that industrial metal kind of, yeah, sound to it. And it just all sounds like it was done in somebody's rusty fucking attic or something. I don't know how to explain it, but it's just, it's got that sound to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's very cold, metallic sound. It just goes on and on and on, and all the songs kind of sound the same after a while. So it's not a good experience, really.
I'll tell you something else that's odd that I wouldn't have said, you wouldn't have pictured me saying this even back when you listen to the MySpace show. Paris Hilton actually does a decent job in this.
You know, I was going to say that, too. I hate to admit that, but that's true. I think she probably does the best job of anybody in this movie.
I think part of it is it really doesn't look like her that much. I mean, they change her look, and she actually does look a lot better with black hair. I don't know.
Not only that, but oddly enough, she can actually kind of sing.
Yeah.
I mean,
she actually does have an album out. So, Paris Hilton, I mean, you know, I said before maybe she doesn't have any talent. I might have been wrong about that. I'm sorry, Paris. I know you're listening here at Deadbeat. Because, you know, she always sets us up with free rooms at these conventions and stuff. We all know that. But she did pretty good. And the lead girl in the movie did good. I'm not sure what her name is. Maybe Alexa Vega. Is that her?
Yeah. Yeah, she plays Shiloh Wallace. I believe it was
Shiloh, baby. Come on.
The thing is, there's a lot of people in this that actually have a history in musicals. Like Anthony Stewart Head, a lot of people might not realize this or might not know this, but he was actually Frankenfurter for a really long time in London and doing the on stage version of the Rocky Horror Picture Show. I mean, he has a ton of experience doing musicals. So that was basically where he got his start at. I don't know about Paul Sorvino, but it sounds to me like he's had some kind of training in classical music or something, by the way.
He looks like a Pavarotti type.
Yeah, he does anyway. He's Italian.
But you know the best thing that's come from us watching this is it gave us an idea, okay? We were talking, I don't know if this will ever happen, but by God, we're going to try to do it. The Dead Pit Opera, okay? What do y'all think of that?
Yeah, I really do think it's going to work out well.
I mean, basically the story of Dead Pit put to song. I don't know how long it would be, but I think it would be fucking hilarious.
But on the note of this movie, though, I didn't like it. I tried really hard to like it in a way where you're like, well, this guy's really trying to do something different. This might be a cult classic type movie, but it's really not. It's just not.
A lot of the visuals in this movie, I don't know if you got this, it looked a lot like fucking Blade Runner.
Yeah, it did.
So I'm sure that was an inspiration. And I'm sure he was thinking maybe try to do something along the lines of Rocky Horror, maybe get that sort of cult aspect to it. But the thing about Rocky Horror is that movie, over the years, just one of those things that just happened. You know, people just go crazy over it. And the songs themselves are actually pretty good. And that's the big difference. I think for an opera to be successful, a rock opera, or a genetic opera, or Repo the Genetic Opera, whatever, you gotta have good music. Any musical or opera or whatever.
Well, it has to at least be memorable. And yeah. I don't remember a single song out of this, honestly. You have to have some kind of hook to these songs. You can't just have grinding industrial music all the time. It doesn't translate.
Even if you look at, you know, stuff that we probably wouldn't admit to liking, like Little Shop of Horrors, you can remember songs in that. I mean, even if you haven't seen the movie for 10 or 15 years, you know. And that's the problem with this is, I mean, the visuals are great. I think Darren Lynn Bousman overall is probably a pretty underrated director. But the big thing is, you have to have excellent music from top to bottom throughout the whole thing. I mean, that's the only way something like this could be successful. And I can definitely see why now, after watching this movie, why Lionsgate didn't want to give this a theatrical run. Because this would be a catastrophic failure if they released this in theaters. No doubt.
Yeah, it's really not for everybody, and for very few people, actually, I can imagine.
Yeah, so that's Repo the Genetic Opera. It's actually out on DVD and Blu-ray. The bonus features include from stage to screen featurette, audio commentary with director Dan Lynn Bousman and actors Bill Moseley, Alexa Vega, and Ogre. Nerds! Audio commentary with Darren Lynn Bousman, creators Darren Smith and Terrence Zudnich, along with music producer Joseph Bissara, Legal Assassin featurette, theatrical trailer. It's also available in 5.1 Dolby Digital, so you can hear all that great music in 5.1. So that's Repo the Genetic Opera. If you're looking for something a little different, you may want to check it out. We commend him on that, him trying to do something that's not typical at all for this day and age. So there you go.
So up next, we've got the 20th anniversary edition of a film that has gained a kind of a cult following over the years, and we'll talk about it, but I have no idea why. Redneck Zombies.
The new Troll Masterpiece Collection.
Right.
And this one's a pretty basic story. This isn't going to be hard to explain at all.
No.
Basically, what happens in Redneck Zombies is a biochemical tank that's holding this, this toxic waste gets lost. And these dumb redneck guys mistake it for a moonshine still, or they want to make a moonshine still out of it. So, of course, the toxins in the tank contaminate the moonshine. All the moonshine's green. Okay? And, of course, that toxic moonshine turns all the other rednecks into redneck zombies. So there you go.
Yeah, that's pretty much the size of it. And then you've got a group of army guys that come in and they're trying to investigate what the hell's going on with it and stuff. And then you've got your core group of like rednecks. It's like a father and was it two sons or something? Mm-hmm. And just some of the most hilarious stereotypical looking rednecks you could ever possibly imagine. And one of them particularly when he turns into a zombie. I don't know what the hell what they used that makeup. But it looks like a mixture of like paper mache and oatmeal or something.
Probably was. And this movie was, I think it was shot on video. I mean, it's really, really generic looking. But, okay, the movie itself is not a good movie at all. But I think there's a few reasons this movie has a cult status right now. One of them is just the randomness, like the horrible edits and cuts and stuff, because in certain scenes, the actors will have really short hair compared to like the other scenes where they've got haircuts in between. Like,
I can't figure out if they did that on purpose or not, though.
I don't know if they did or not. And then there's another scene, too, where the black guy in there, he has like this wig on. Like, he must have shaved his head bald or something. He has this horrible wig on that you can, I mean, it doesn't work at all. But my favorite character in the whole movie, I don't know why this guy is so funny, but he is the character that's always drinking the fifth liquor.
Yeah. You know?
And he just reminds me so much of my Uncle Danny when he was like, in the 1980s, the way he looks and stuff. And it's just hilarious because he never says anything. He just laughs at whatever's going on and takes a drink of the liquor. Yeah.
There's so many scenes in this movie, though, that defy explanation. I think one of the ones that I always go, there's a whole bunch of scenes where the guys on the army base will just start engaging in dialogue, and it kind of reminds me of the stuff in the movie Santa Claus, where you just think, did they just run out of shit to do, and they just need to have like 5 or 10 minutes of dialogue so they can stand there and talk about stuff that doesn't really even relate to the story going on or anything.
Yeah.
And that happens like quite a bit throughout this movie too. It really doesn't affect anything that's going on. It's just kind of filler for the rest of the movie. But also, I think the scene everybody remembers in this movie, and probably the only scene that's really worth buying this movie for, in my opinion, is the scene where the guy gets his eyes gouged out.
By the big, well, I can't remember the character's name, the big fat.
I don't remember either.
Guy, but he's hilarious.
Yeah, he is.
Like, I don't know where they found some of these people. And the black army guy is funny looking, too. He's like, don't know. He's a great over actor. But, yeah, the gore scene with that. And there's a few good gore scenes in this movie, I thought. I mean, definitely great for the budget they had. I mean, they evidently didn't have a huge budget for this.
Interestingly enough, though, what I noticed about this DVD is that this is supposed to be the color-corrected transfer. I don't even know what the hell that means. I mean, I know what it means, but I don't think they corrected anything, really.
Well, for one thing, I think this is a shot on video. How could they correct it?
Well, if you
they
watch
the
opening,
negative from the original.
If you
VHS.
Watch the opening of this film, you start to realize that nothing about this film is really as it seems. Like Pericles Loons, I don't think that guy exists. Like, you get the feeling that name is false for one thing. Nobody thinks that name is real. But did a guy like that even ever exist? Or was this just something that Lloyd Kaufman or Charles Kaufman or somebody, or hell, Charles Kaufman might not even exist. I don't even know. That's the thing about trauma. You never really know.
Yeah. But as far as recommending this movie to a horror fan, I would say if you love really, really bad movies, you want to check this out. Now, you might not want to put yourself through this movie unless you have a high tolerance for shit. Because, I mean, this is not a well-made movie. Like, if you're a person that's against all the shot-on-video films, and you won't like it. But looking at this again, this is like only the second time I've ever seen this. I got some enjoyment out of it this time around, but it's just, it's a little few and far between, you know, the enjoyable parts in it.
It's not very good. It's really not, but on some kind of level, just the idea behind it kind of resonates with me anyway, because, I mean, look where we're at and everything. So yeah. I enjoyed it for that aspect of it, but as far as the movie goes, it's not very good.
Well, actually, though, Trauma, this is the 20th anniversary edition, the Trauma Masterpiece Collection, number 2. They did put some decent extras on this, believe it or not. I mean, I don't know if Trauma usually does this. We're actually back on their screening list, which is amazing. I didn't know that would happen. But there's like there's a little segment in the beginning called Kaufman's Cultural Corner with 3 K's.
Right.
And they evidently have a special interview with Pericles Loons himself.
Right.
On there. And that's really enjoyable little intro segment with those guys and a Tromette, I think, as well. You also have a brand new audio commentary with director Pericles Loons and producer Ed Bishop, along with new interviews with those guys, cast and crew. Behind-the-scenes footage, the original promotional videos, outtakes, and much more. And also, it's a 2-disc edition, and it also includes the original soundtrack for Redneck Zombies.
Wow. That's what I was thinking when I was reading that. Why in the world would you want that?
But that's fucking killer if they did that. So.
Oh, Lord.
Anyway, overall, I recommend this. I recommend it for the people that we talked about before, because this movie just needs to be experienced once for all the horror fans out there, so you can get in on the looniness that was brought to us by Pericles Loons.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's Redneck Zombies. You just have to be a certain type of person to like that movie, I guess.
You have to be special.
Yeah, not everybody's going to like it, much like Repo. I guess that can be said about either one of these movies, yep. Although Redneck Zombies is better.
Yeah. For more info, though, you can go to trauma.com or traumadance.com.
That's it, buddy.
That's it for the show this week. What do you think of that?
I think it's killer. I thought it was a pretty good show.
So, anyway, big thanks to everybody for calling in again, giving your thoughts on the year that was 2001. And maybe some people, yeah, I mean, we didn't talk about August Underground. Might be one of the things that people thought we would discuss.
I just didn't even know it came out.
I didn't either. I didn't really put those two together because that is a small movie. I mean, it was, a lot of people dig it, but, you know. If you want to hear our opinions on that, though, we reviewed that son of a bitch a few years ago. So you can go back in the archives and listen to that, I guess. But until next week, I'm a Creepy Kentuckian.
I am Uncle Bill.
And you've been listening to the very first. All you some bitches out there that said you were before us, no. We're the very first on this group.
We are.
We're here.
Dead Pitch.
Dot com.